हरिः ॐ श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सदि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Hasyarati appears when funny words are spoken, when the dress looks odd, when actions are caricatured, and so on. Opening of the heart, widening of the eyes, flaring of the nostrils, trembling of the lips and cheeks characterize this mellow. This mellow is also generated by love of Krishna, combined with Sankocha Bhava, the emotion of hesitation. By seeing something wonderful or extraordinary, the heart expands in vishmaya, astonishment and wonder. The external symptoms are such as widening of the eyes and exclamations of the of appreciation. Okay. What was it? Okay. Oh, vishmaya. Okay, astonishment. That's the second one. Okay, so you see in all these there's external symptoms, but it's just a matter of means everything, there's the eternal mood, there's the external symptoms. So we have to be able to tell the difference by the category on what is kind of like the proportion or combination or where it's situated in the whole process of bhava, right? Because otherwise we'll say, they all give physical symptoms, and they all have emotional symptoms, so aren't they all the same? But there's a slight difference, with that. So we have to be able to catch what is that subtlety. Okay? Okay. The external symptom. Okay. Utsaha. So that's the next one, which was eagerness. Is the resolute enthusiasm of the mind to engage in grand projects, which are eulogized by stalwart saints. This mellow displays symptoms such as urgency in activity, impatience, great exertion, and fervor. In Krodharati, eagerness, shoka, karuna, lamentation. Okay. In Krodharati, the heart burns in rage, on account of pratikula bhav, that means a bhava that's not favorable, displeasing and unfavorable feelings. This mellow displays symptoms such as callous in temperament, frowning and livid eye expressions. Bhayarati is caused by seeing a terrifying scene where the heart palpitates and with restless apprehension. This mellow displays symptoms such as the endeavor to conceal oneself, dryness of the heart, and flight from the scene. Jugupsa rati is evoked by something contemptuous, leading to disgust. Certain physical transformations are exhibited in this rati, such as spitting, grimacing, and spontaneous words of vilification. These feelings are only considered transcendental rati when they are favorably disposed to Krishna, They are not, they are simply the mundane foibles of the heart of an ordinary mortal. Right? In other words, it's favorable to Krishna because there's something that's disgusting that's opposed to Krishna, and then you're upset with that. Then it's useful. Otherwise, if it's directed at... See, the other ones can be directed towards Krishna, but this one is not directed towards Krishna. It can be favorable to Krishna, but not directed towards him. Rajana, how many bhavas are there in Bhakti Rasa? Goswami. There are 8 Stai bhavas, 33 Sanchari bhavas, 8 Sattvika bhavas, which total 49. When these bhavas are mundane, they stem from the 3 modes of material nature and become the cause of fleeting joys and sorrows. However, when they are dovetailed with Krishna, they become transcendental to the material modes and are sources of profound immortal bliss. Even in shoka, deep despondency, they give forth immense pleasure. So here's one of the major elements that's there, is that when they're on the transcendental platform, then they're fully favorable and they give the transcendental response. When they're not, when they're functioning on the material platform, then they're functioning under the modes of nature. So the mode of goodness, if it's functioning under the mode of goodness, it will basically have the same form as that which you'll see in the spiritual world. But it doesn't have the same attitude because it's for oneself. Though this element of duty and what you're supposed to do, sacrifice, all the auspicious qualities will be there, but it's for yourself. So it still won't have that same degree of intensity at all. Right? But mode of passion, then it starts to get more perverted because you're doing it for yourself. So whether you're going to actually be following all the rules or not, because it's for yourself, then if it's passion and goodness, it may have the form of, but the attitude will be wrong, so it'll be out of balance. Right? If the passion's more, then you'll, as long as you're getting your result, you'll follow the normal form, but when you're not, you'll change it. Because the point is, it's just to get what you want. Right? As it drops down into ignorance, then it may even look backwards from what it's supposed to be. Right? So that's the problem, is this whole thing's still going on the same, but because of the modes of nature, it doesn't take on its natural form. Right?
All right. Huh. In the previous paragraph, describing the symptoms of Utsaha and Krodha, we can see that very clearly in a very realized solid Prabhupada. His enthusiasm to do, his anger when someone was out of pleasing Krishna.
Yeah, because that's just the natural forms. Because they do have natural forms. You know, but then, you know, others, natural forms, natural placement of them. You know, but then the problem is that when you're not dealing on this transcendental platform, you know, or at least on the mode of goodness, then it starts to become, it becomes strange. You don't know what it is. Just like in the modern, it doesn't matter what, if you're, let's say you're describing your interaction with somebody, right? It doesn't matter what you say. There are words that you can take and turn it exactly 180 degrees from your actual intent. And the people will do it with such conviction. Because it's not actually to do with rasa, it's to do with their more material ethics to get done what they want to get profit from. But it'll be presented as it's something special. Like that. Does that make sense? It's always the way it is. The materials, because he doesn't know what rasa is, he doesn't mind moving it around as he pleases. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, let's say, you know, you have all the parts of a car, right? And, you know, you have some kids come in. They'll put it together however they like. You know, the carburetor will look really good on the dashboard. You know, like that, you know. So, you know, stuff like that. You know, they'll sit on the front hood and they'll have the steering wheel. You know, all these things are fun. Maybe even better sitting on the roof. You know, it's just, it doesn't matter to them. It's just some fun. So that's generally what people do with rasa. They put it anywhere they want, and then, you know, it's like we're saying, well, it's physical, so why not all the physical things will stick in one place? Right, because it's all about ease, how it would just be easy for me, not about the difficulty it comes to actually discern the difference between the two. You know, does that make sense? Like, you're taking a vegetable, and you're making basically a somewhat dry subject, Okay? Now, if I take it, make the chaunce, put in the sabji, and then cook it like that, right, I'll get one effect. If I boil the sabji first, then make the chaunce and put it in, I get a different effect. So in Bengali, they're actually two different preparations. So the spicing and the vegetables may be exactly the same, but the effect will be totally different. Does that make sense? So those kind of subtleties, then if you can't tell them, you can't tell the difference between the things. So that's the whole point in the rasa. There's a difference in these. Like that is where the thing is at. Because as mentioned, it's the rasa that is the one that's controlling all the other bhavas. Right? So even though the you see physical symptoms from the stai bhava or from these gona ratis, right? But the point is they're the one that's controlling everything else. You know what I'm saying? Like the fear is there, but that fear then has its area that you're afraid of. Right? And then which one has made you afraid? And then what are the secondary bodily symptoms that will come from Anubhava, or the Sanchari Bhava, or the different things from the Sattvika Bhava? Right? But it's the prominent. Does that make sense? So, but you know, the Anubhava also has physical, but that's just the normal kind of reactions and going and all that, so you can tell what they're... But then the Sattvika Bhavas, they're much more intense. Because there, even though it's physical, it's the life air is off, that's what causes it. While in the Anubhava, the life airs aren't out of place. Or in the Mukhya Gona Rati, they're not out of place. Does that make sense? So that's the thing, is these subtleties are important. Otherwise, one won't catch what rasa is. They say, oh, this is complicated. No, this is simple. Right? Complicated is when you have to deal with all of them at once. We're just studying one at a time. That's simple. Does that make sense? Yeah.
So I'm looking at a pure devotee like Prabhupada, but many times we didn't catch the subtlety of the rasa going on, but we get the external attitude.
Like that. So it's just so much more clear, you know, like the things like the eyes widening or all those different things. You see it much more there. You know, when you're dealing with kids, you see it more also. But it's not so sophisticated. But the natural thing is those are the natural responses. Just as you grow up, they should become more sophisticated. You know, not that they disappear, you know, like in the modern, yes.
We learned that Brahmanas should be very composed in their expressions. How this is reconciled with the rasas?
Yeah, it just means it's more subtle.
So they don't open eyes?
No, it's the whole overall. Let's give an example. Okay, Yudhishthira Maharaj, you know, something good happens. What do you see? Right? Basically nothing. A little smile. Okay. Now, the Brazilian soccer player makes a goal. What happens? Yeah. Yeah, it's the whole thing. Ah, the t-shirt, this, that, the sliding on the ground. You know, the whole thing. So that's the difference in the nature of the person. The first class person, you'll just get that little smile. Second class will be that and a little bit more. You know, third class, you get the whole drama. Right? You know, yes.
My teacher literacy would say, do you know how you see that the group of Brazilians are coming? That little creek with all the fishes jumping up and down.
Okay.
It's them coming.
Okay. Because they're coming up the creek. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, so that's the thing. But of course, if at the game the guy kicks a goal and then there's this slight little smile like that, I don't think the crowds would be very impressed. You know? No one's going to pay money to see a little smile. You know, they want to see the whole, you know, riot. You know. So that's that you'll have there, but it's still the same symptoms, but just very subtle. You know, that's all. But where we're, yeah. But what we're mentioning is like, you know, the political. You're sitting there and you're talking to them and they're all so nice and wonderful. And then you find out later they hated everything you say and they're going to get you for it. You know? So that's the problem, is that, you know, but the same people are talking community and this and that, you know, so it's a problem. Yeah. Okay. Srila Rupa Goswami writes that Krishna and his dear devotees, headed by the gopis, act as the alambana, beloved and lovers, the foundation of bhakti rasa, and therefore generate mutual rati in the form of 8 sthayi bhavas of loving attachment in this way. Okay. So we get what it means by the 8 sthayi bhavas. Because we've mentioned sthayi bhavas as 5. So what's the 8?
Is it one mukhya rati and...
Yes, 1 mukhya and 7 gona. Because the mukhya, there'll only be 1. But the 7, because they're transitory, anybody may have them. Mm. Like that. Yes.
Why the anubhavas and vibhavas are not mentioned among the bhaktiras?
Why the 8 bhavas? Because
anubhav and vibhav.
Because it's the vibhava is what causes it, and the anubhava is just the side things that come. But your main things that are going on is the sthayi bhavas, the sanchari, and the sattvikas. That's what you'll see. Because the vibhava just means that's what is coming up from. Right here. Srila Rupa Goswami writes that Krishna and his dear devotees, headed by the gopis, act as the alambana. So it's Krishna and his devotees, they're the alambana. Right, they're the basis of the rasa being exchanged. Right. In this way, Krishna and his devotees are the karana, cause of the rasa of rati, spiritual love. The 8 sattvika bhavas causing the 8 sattvika vikars, transcendental bodily transformations, beginning with stumbha, being stunned in ecstasy, are counted among the karya, effects of rati. And the 33 Vyabhachari Bhavas, Sanchari Bhavas, beginning with Nirveda, indifference to material enjoyment, act as Sahaya, assistance of this Rati. However, in the final analysis, when Rasa is evidently manifest, these various manifestations of Rati are no longer described as Karana, cause, Karya, effect, and Sahaya, assistance, but as Vibhava, instinctive causes of ecstasy. Vibhav has the power to make these manifestations of rati increasingly competent to relish the Vishaya, Sri Krishna. Therefore, the Acharyas also categorize the many various manifestations of rati as vibhava, instigative causes of bhava. Furthermore, because nritya, dancing, and other similar manifestations of rati magnify and demonstrate vibhava, they are called anubhavas, resultant manifestations of bhava. So you have all these that you, in other words, when you're analyzing it, you go through them one at a time like this, you see the categories, you see each, but when it's manifesting, then they basically just call it vibhava, right? Because everything that happens will be the stimulus for the next aspect of rasa. Does that make sense? Right. So, in other words, let's say the devotee does something that stimulates that affection in Krishna. And then that manifests as one of the other aspects of bhava. Seeing that devotee, then he becomes inspired, and then therefore so many symptoms. And then seeing those symptoms, then the other devotees in Krishna become, you understand? So therefore, all it is a constant element of each one nourishing the other's rasa. So it's always increasing, always developing. So therefore you can say it's vibhava. Does that make sense? And then you'll say anubhava, what are the other, those secondary symptoms? Right? So anubhava can mean just that particular group, but also if you're doing in dynamic, the dynamic manifestation of the rasa, then vibhava is everything that's you're inspired by. Anubhava was simply being those, what is the particular physical symptom of the emotion that has been sparked by that. Does that make sense? So that means even your Vavichari, the Asanchari Bhavas, because they give a physical reaction, then that would be the Anubhava. And you know that that mood of the Sanchari Bhava is what it's displaying. But it's a mood that's in Sanchari, not in Anu, or it may be, you can see the Stai Bhava, but I mean not the Stai, the Sattvika Bhava, you know, that's the physical, you know, but you know what the mood is, you understand? But they're just different categories of kinds of reactions. So, because it's an emotional mood and it has a physical reaction, therefore it can be categorized as a general aspect, as Viva, as Anubhava, right? So then in the rasa, what's going on, what you'll see is Vibhava, Anubhava. Does that make sense? But it's based on the particular Stai Bhava. Does that make sense? So in other words, there's going to be that which is inspiring the rasa and that which is the physical symptoms of the emotional response to that inspiration. Does that make sense? So that way then, the means each one is a Vibhava and each one is an Anubhava. Right? Does that make sense? So that's what will be going on in the dynamic. That's why the question comes up before. But no, but that'll cause the physical reaction. But that's only in when you're the bhava's rolling. Right? Does that make sense? But when you're analyzing, there's different aspects because these different kinds of emotions, which are coming from different reasons, those give, of course, they have the emotion and the physical response. Does that make sense? So therefore, all the five combined together, that's rasa. Okay? But what you're going to see is, what's the inspiration? What's the physical symptom? Okay? Yes? No? In other words, you have to be able to accommodate. That's why our philosophy is so great. You have to be able to accommodate that Anubhava is a specific thing and Anubhava is a general thing. You know, a Vibhava is a specific thing, but a Vibhava is the general thing. Right? And the same thing that has a specific can be in the general category or the other category. Right? It all works at once. Does this make sense or it doesn't make sense?
The masculine and feminine, they alternate accordingly.
Yeah, masculine and feminine, it's just depending on which one you're taking is prominent, then it switches. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, let me say, based on the mood of Krishna, right, he said something stupid. So the gopis respond to that, you know, as the feminine thing, as anger. But now, that will switch because now they're taking the aggressive thing of applying that anger on Krishna, depending upon his mood, how to apply the anger that fits the mood that's there. So it's actually taking that masculine movement. You know what I'm saying? Because they're responding to how Krishna deals. Because Krishna says, as you surrender, I reciprocate. That's the masculine position. But now how he's done, then they take that. And then depending on that, then he takes that. So at every mood, there's whoever's starting it, that's the masculine, the other is the feminine. And then they respond, that takes the masculine, the other is the feminine. But the masculine has an overall flavor, the feminine has an overall flavor. You know what I'm saying? So therefore you can tell the difference. You can tell who's the male, who's the female in the relationship. But the actual dynamic of it is constantly switching. Does that make sense? That's why it becomes more difficult. That's why a car is a lot easier than people. Like that. But that technical aspect of the mechanics is the same. But because it's not conscious, it's not that you sit there and, you know, you're tightening the spark plug and you do it a little too tight, you know, and then you know, something, you know, whatever it is, you know, one of the wires comes up and whacks you in the head or something. You know, it doesn't do that. You know, it just breaks. You know, like that. Yes.
You already answered my question.
Already answered. Okay. Okay. Okay, therefore the Acharyas also categorize the many various manifestations of Rati as Vibhava, instinctive causes of Bhava. Isn't there another way of saying that?
Instigative.
Yeah, that's the more. Instigative, I think, is the more. Yeah, it's, you don't.
Instigate something.
Yeah. No, but I'm just saying it's many words in English. Those who are more edumacated, then they somehow use that form of it. That kind of. There's a few words like that. Okay. Furthermore, because Nritya dancing and other similar manifestations of Rati magnify and demonstrate Vibhava, they are called Anubhavas, right? So in other words, Vibhava is that being inspired in the rasa. So that's so that you know that they're inspired, there is a physical manifestation, right? So that's why it's called the Anubhava. Because the main thing is the mood that comes up from being inspired. Right? So wherever the position that mood, that's the mood that's come up, and it has a physical manifestation. So through the Anubhava, you can tell what is the particular mood being experienced in the Vibhava. Right? Yes. Does that make sense? Okay. As pure transcendental bhava manifests the eight sattvika vikaras, these are called sattvika bhavas. The various bhavas which inject the 33 symptoms, beginning with nirveda into anubhava rati and vibhava rati, and thus breathe impetus and variegatedness into them, are known as the 33 sanchari bhavas. Simulative, exciting ecstasies. Ultimately, the Shuddha Bhaktas and Acharyas have identified Vibhava as the root cause of bhakti. In truth, the transcendental emotion of bhava being productive of and equivalent to rati is a subject of inconceivable nature and the arena of the purest form of bhakti. Because it says here, Krishna and his devotees, they're the cause, they are Vibhava. Right, they're alambana. Right, so any one of whichever one you're focusing on, that's the udipan. Does that make sense? So your alambana is that whole group. Which one is the one that you're noticing at the time? Then that's there. So that means the devotees themselves, Krishna himself, the devotees themselves. So however they're responding according to the bhavas. But it's they themselves that's the important thing. It's not the bhava. It's they themselves. Does that make sense? That's the difference. In the material world, you're inspired, someone's done something very great or noble, but it's not exactly the person that you care about. It's the impersonal aspect of that quality. You know, the greatness, the sacrifice. You know, we'll go on about the sacrifice of this and that. We won't actually talk about the person. You know, it's like that, because we don't even know. It's not important, but you have to have a medium for it. That's the difference. Well, in the spiritual, it's actually the person. And these qualities, these are all the qualities they have. So whichever, they themselves are the lumbana, and then all these secondary qualities, I mean, it's, you know, all these things that they have, those are just the various aspects of them that you're inspired by. Which one's manifesting? Like Krishna's beauty is manifesting. So that's the beauty is the udipan. Right? Or his compassion or his cleverness. You know? Does that make sense? Whatever it is. So all that's a lambana. Which one is manifesting, that's the udipan. Right? Yes.
When you talk about truth for the Western thought, it's hard to accommodate that the truth is a person which manifests that element of truth. We talk about something such.
No, because truth, in the modern truth is facts. That's all. Just like if I didn't tell you the truth, the facts, then I'm lying. Right? Let's say, where are you going? Oh, I'm going to the market. Right? But I didn't say what I'm doing in the market or anything like that. So I didn't tell you all the facts. So then when you get back later, because some friend saw you wherever you were and what you were doing, and they tell me, and so that's, in my mind, different than what you said. You did go to the market, but I take you go to the market to buy some vegetables or this, but you went to the market to do something else, right? So therefore, when you come back, I'll say, why did you lie to me? You know what I'm saying? But it's like, where's the lie? Lie means to tell not truth, right? But it's taken, if all the facts aren't presented, that's false. Because it's all about facts. It's not about actually the mood and all that. So reality is the mood. So reality was the intent why one went to the market. You need to go to the market to accomplish that intent. You know, does that make sense? So how can I trust? But trust what? It's just a matter of trust facts. What about the person? Like you're saying, it's not actually about the person. That's the thing. That's why we're saying is that the actual mukya rasas aren't really a prominent in the material world. It's all the guna rasas. Right? And so those become the basis for all the other. Does that make sense? So that's why the Vedic has what's dharma, so that there's much more functioning, at least mechanically, according to the mukya ras. Right? So there's a little bit more of an experience. But if one drops the Vedic culture, then how often is it going to be the mukya ras manifests? You know? And then I think it was in England, I was sitting in somebody's house looking out the window, you know, second floor. And I see this lady going by, you know, high heels, really super tight pants, you know, low what do they call, low riders or something, you know, like that. It means, you know, basically, you know, above your belt and below your belly button, everything sticks out, you know, high tank top like that, super tight, you know, all kinds of other things on, hair, makeup, everything. Okay, so that's okay, that's not weird, right? Is that weird? Not for England. No, that's not weird. What was weird is she was pushing a pram. So that's the mom. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, you know, that mom, that doesn't go together. You know, like that, you know. Before mom, yes. But after mom, you kind of expect, you know, it doesn't match. So that's the thing. So how do you taste the rasas? How do you, you know, it just doesn't work. Does that make sense? That's the difficult one. Okay. So as pure transcendental bhava manifests the vikaras, right? Then injected into that are the 33 sanchari bhavas. Right. In other words, when there's these physical symptoms, then there's these subtler aspects of the symptoms, right? Because everything's coming up and changing. But the sanchari bhavas are thing within one more. Let's say you have a general emotion, but there's other things that can come up within that. Does that make sense? Let's say you're being indifferent, but you can also be arrogantly indifferent, or you can be sadly indifferent, or you understand? So those are the sanchari. So they're the finer ones that are within the other bigger one. Right? But that's why they're aggressive, because they're the ones that are moving. They're the ones that are... Right? Does this make sense? Mm-hmm.
So, this is explanation of how spiritual society functions.
Yes.
And then we have to practice this before we go there. Otherwise, we can't really go there, because there's no place for...
It means you'll be taught it there. They'll train you out of there. But the point is it's, if you're absorbed in Krishna, these things will be natural. Now, exactly what are the details? That's why it says you follow in the footstep of a resident of Vrindavan. Right? Because then you are aware of how they do things, what they do. You understand? So, therefore, that general thing of, if you have the mood of following and that absorption in Krishna, then all the other details will be worked out. Because these are natural. The point is if that affection for Krishna comes up, these things manifest. So the main thing is that love for Krishna is the central feature. And that will be there according to the particular devotee that you're following. Does that make sense? So we have the thing is, I'm servant of the servant of Krishna, right? And I value the Vaishnava association, so I deal as nicely as possible. Then you're qualified to function within the spiritual environment. Does that make sense? So other details and skills will be taught. So it may be you would respond in one way, but they'll tell you don't respond like that. You do like this. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like, you know, Krishna's coming. When they go, wow, Krishna's coming, it's bang. You know, it says we don't do that. We're in public. You know, so then everybody's there. You know, then you put on that, you know, what is it, Nirveda? Yeah, Nirveda, you know, which is in what do you call it? Where you're not caring.
Indifference.
Right? You know what I'm saying? That's just what girls do. You know, that's just how it works. Does that make sense? It's just like, we give an example. There's two male, big male lions sitting down at the water hole, right? You know, just, you know, but I guess it's, you know, it's warm and they're a bit lazy and probably not overly hungry. So they're just sitting there hanging out. And so then a female lion walks by behind them and over to the side so they can see. But she's completely ignoring them. But unfortunately, they just go on in their guy bov, right? And they don't even notice her. So having walked by, as you know, she's not noticing. But then after she does her walk, and they should have noticed, they don't. She turns around, comes back over until she's right here. The male lion doesn't notice her. Then he turns, and then she smacks him in the face, you know, for being so, you know, such a dweeb, you know, like that. And then walks off in indifference again, you know, but now he's watching, you know, what happened, you know, like that, you know. So it's, does that make sense? At least it makes sense to half the audience. Right? The other half is going, I don't understand. Because the point is the indifference doesn't mean that you're not aware. It's just a front to put on as if you're not. You know? So, like that. You know, so it's like Krishna's playing the boatman and the gopis come down, he just is fiddling with his boat. He knows they're there. He knows they want to ride, but he pretends as if he's busy with his boat. You know, and then they have to, you know, again and again try to get his attention. You know, and it's only when they get really rough, okay, that, then it's, yes, you know, it's like, you know, as if I'm busy with my boat, you know, what's your problem? You know, like that, we need a ride. No, my boat's not ready, I'm sorry. You know, like that kind of, you know, so they have fun. So it's used, but it's something within something else. You can see is it's not the major feeling. It's a subtler feeling that's adding flavor to the more major feeling. That's what makes it sanctuary. Does that make sense? Yeah. So in other words, you have so many layers. You have the main feeling. You have what's inspired the feeling. You have the other physical symptoms that are manifesting from that feeling. And then you have the subtle ones on top of that that are going, changing more quickly. So you have really quickly changing, you have more slowly changing, and you have the fixed. So does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. Scriptures such as the Mahabharata have defied Bhava. Deified Bhava as transcendentally pure and spotless, enthroning it upon a pedestal beyond the jurisdiction of empirical speculation and analysis. Therefore, the scriptures recommend that one not to encroach upon this inconceivable knowledge through inductive philosophy and rhetoric. Rati is the enchanting element in the paradigm of rasa. It colors Krishna's beauty, quality, and pastimes with the hues of Vibhava, thus nourishing Vibhava along with itself. Right. So, in other words, it's nourishing the inspiration, it's nourishing the feeling itself. Right. So, it's coloring all these different things. Krishna's beauty, qualities, pastimes, because it colors it with that particular attraction. Like Krishna's beauty is there. Mother Yashoda appreciates that, but differently, it's a different hue than the gopis appreciate it. Right? Or that the cowherd boys appreciate it. Right? You know, a guy dresses up nice, the other guys appreciate it. Right? But it's a different flavor than your mom appreciating it. It's a different flavor than the girls appreciate it. Right? So those are all the different hues that are there. But the vibhava is the same. It's still Krishna looking beautiful. Right? But the response, the emotional response you'll get from that will be different according to that. Right? So there'll be different manifestations of that. And within that, then there'll be the subtleties of the sanctuary. You know? You know, it's like the guy will come out, you think, wow, he looks good. But then you might use the element of Nirveda, you know, well, I don't know, you know, like that. He says, really? It looks bad? No, I'm just joking. Yeah, like that. And then it goes into Hasya, then it goes into the secondary Rasa. Then, you understand? It's just constantly moving. So that's the point, is that if it's within the context that's natural for that Rasa, then it's appreciated. But if it goes outside of that Rasa, then it's Rasa Bas. It doesn't match. So that's why you're moving with people that are like-minded, because you can appreciate how the rasa moves. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Here we learn how to do it theoretically more, and there we will learn how to do it practically just by following.
Yeah, but if you're not aware of it, you don't understand what it is you're appreciating. You know, in other words, it's not just Krishna's form you're appreciating. It's that whole mood, it's the rasa, that's there, and so you're interacting with Krishna based on that. Otherwise, how much do you talk about what he's dressing on? If that's the basis of the rasa, how far does it go? You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know, it means, in other words, if there's not people that are constantly producing new, you know, programs and applications, you know, for whatever gizmo you have, nerds would run out of things to talk about and they would have no relationship. You understand? Because there's nothing there to talk about. There's no third party. But what we're talking about is your relationship is first party. Right? But it's all these other things, they add to that. So that's the difference. In the material world, it's about that. In the spiritual world, it's about the person. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like the mom is saying, you can't wear that. Why not? Because for the kid in his circle, that will work great. But for the mom in her circle, if her friends see that her kid's dressed like that, they'll complain to her. It'll mess up her circle. So it's not about the person. It's about what that person represents within their world. You know what I'm saying? Well, in the spiritual, it's about the person. That's the difference. The mechanics are the same. But there's the difference is that it's being applied. So, therefore, what we're learning from all this is that the concept of relationship is much deeper than we're looking at it in the material world. But, as it points out, because Mahabharata has deified bhava, it puts it that you don't even discuss it. Right? That's the point, is because who is the Mahabharata for? It's for a general group of persons. So you don't want it to be used by empirical speculation. Right? In other words, those who are simply based on the senses, you don't want them speculating on rasa. So that's why it's deified. But when you're getting into the bhakti scriptures, then it can be discussed from that point of respect of it. Yeah. Work? I used the word okay.
I didn't know.
Oh, you didn't know the word? I said, kind of okay.
Didn't make sense.
Oh, okay. Okay. Right? Because the point is it's not a matter of logic and argument, you know, because, does that make sense? It means, in other words, like when we first started the discussion, then it's logical. That's an emotion and a physical response, and this is an emotion and a physical response. Aren't they the same thing? Right? So it's not a matter of logic. It's a matter of that appreciation of what it is, the subtleties of the rasa. And then as we go over the days, then we start to be able to see the difference and appreciate, and we can, you know, how things are layered on top of each other. And then today, you know, completely, how you say, defining it in a broader category where everything gets thrown into the same thing. We're trying to throw it into the same thing, but we're not allowed. But the acharyas throw it all together, but you have to know how to do that. Does that make sense? Yes.
Could I say that previously you mentioned that culture is an unfold of philosophy.
Culture is?
Unfold is the demonstration of the outcome.
Yes, yes.
So, also when we try to analyze culture, sometimes we lose elements of it because it's more like it's lived than actually fully.
Because when you're analyzing, it's static. That's why it's different. We're going through here. This is not what we would call... This is the analysis of rasa. I mean, even the chapter is called that, right? It's the analysis of rasa. Right? For the consideration. Okay, like that. Is that you're analyzing it. Because when you're analyzing it, it's not dynamic. Right? It's in here because of that love. There's that natural spontaneity. You see this in the one person, that evokes that in you. Them seeing that, it evokes that in them. It just keeps going unlimitedly. But this is the science of how it works. You know? But the point is their analyzation is not just to get an intellectual understanding. Their analyzation is they see this symptom, so this means this, so therefore then you know how to respond or how, you know, what to do. Does that make sense? So therefore the analyzation is there but it's dynamic because it's being applied, but we're just becoming aware that it exists. Is that sound okay?
I even meant in our case of our society that the culture, the Vedic culture itself, the application of it sometimes seems a bit far because it's hard to actually get down to those reciprocations.
But these come naturally. That's the thing, is these are spontaneous. But what is there? It means Rupa Goswami writes that Krishna and his dear devotees, headed by the gopis, act as the alambana, beloved and lovers, the foundation of bhakti ras, and therefore generate mutual rati in the form of 8 stai bhavas of loving attachment. Okay? Now, do they have authority issues? No. Do they feel that this manifestation of rati is for my happiness? Do you understand? Do they think I need to be in control of this so that I can be happy? Okay? Do you understand? So that's where the Vedic getting involved is not, it's not this. This is not the problem. This will come naturally. The problem is those basic things, because authority, you know, why we should follow the scriptures, that's old, that's archaic, that's ancient. No, it's authority. That's why we don't want to follow it. We'll say, give an example, oh, it's old, so that's why I don't want to follow it. Yeah? But, and then how many millions of people are freaking out and booking the airlines and packing the streets when there's an Olympic? Right? How old is the Olympics? How many thousands of years old? So it's not old that we have a problem with. All right? Christianity, that's 2,000 years old. People don't seem to have a problem with it. Right? Judaism goes back, you know, 4,000 years or so. Maybe more. You know what I'm saying?
Wearing pants.
Huh?
Wearing pants?
Yeah, they've been wearing pants for a long time. Right? You know? You know, kilts have not caught on yet, right? You know, so it's like,
any day now.
Any day now, yeah, any day now. Does that make sense? So the point is that we just use that as, oh yeah, it's old. Yeah, we don't want anything old. You know, as if it's like a vegetable or something. It's a perishable that if it gets too old, it's not there. But like, you know, so, you know, you know, you know, you know, it's like, you know, You bring the wine list, you know, and the guy looks at it and says, don't you have anything new? You know, why all this old stuff? You know? Does that make sense? You know, it's like, so that's the whole thing, is it's you know what I'm saying? It's just a trick. Because the real thing is this is authority, and I don't want to not be in control. I want to be able to say what I want to do. That's the real reason the Vedic system has a problem. Otherwise, is it so hard to figure out? You know what I'm saying? It's like, it's very simple. There's eight stations there, and they have pretty much, you know, simple concept of what their areas are, but no one can figure it out. Why is that? Because no one wants to figure it out. Just like, how hard is it to clean up the room, right? But the kid's been sitting there for an hour. See, all he has to do is when he cleans his room, he can go out and play. But he's been sitting there for an hour. Why? Because he can't clean up the room, can't figure out how to clean up the room. He could clean the room in 5 minutes. He doesn't want to clean the room. That's why he's sitting there. And he's got a million excuses. He's got reasons why he shouldn't clean the room. Right? That's the point. Because these things, it's not that these things will come naturally. If you're in the natural purified state, these schemes come automatically. In fact, they're going on now. But as described before in the rasa, is that when it manifests, because it has a nature, everything has a nature, it's either manifest in its ideal form or something not ideal. So when it's manifest or something not ideal, it doesn't really come out so well. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Okay, so just to clarify, so the difficulty wouldn't be actually understanding how the system runs, but more wanting to follow.
Yeah. Once you want to know, then it'll be very quick. Because then what would you do? There'd be lots of discussion and symposium on figuring this out. Right? But it's not. Like, just like, let's say, I don't know, here we had, I think it was last year, it was the year before. There was a whole thing somehow that ended up here. Like that. That it was a Varnashram discussion of all the practicing Varnashramites. You know? Like that, and sit down. So everyone would introduce themselves and said something about the project or what they're doing or what they felt was important in Varnashram. Everybody's talking about carrots and sabji, you know, like that. Like that. A couple about cows. And when it got to me, I started talking the philosophy of the Varnashram and how that. And then I was, you know, told, says, okay, nice, but there's other people that have to talk, you know. It's like they want to talk about their carrots. They didn't want to hear the philosophy of Varnashram. And these are the practicing Varnashramites. So that's the point. How you practice a culture if you don't know the philosophy? Because Varnashram is a lot more than cabbages. You know? But that's the problem. Who wants to be part of Varnashram? That means how many devotees are from a rural background and that's where they're situated? Very few. Even if you go to an ISKCON farm, how rural is it? You know what I'm saying? A few are, right? You go out to Belgaum, it is in the middle of nowhere. You know, so, and everything runs by that. But most places, you know, they got nice, you know, asphalt things up to their things where they park their cars, they got their garages, they got that, they work in town, they do all the whole thing. You know what I'm saying? So, therefore, who wants to hear about growing cabbages? Who wants to be the cabbage grower? You know what I'm saying?
Why are you talking about that?
Huh?
Why would these people talk about that if nobody wants to hear?
Well, they want to talk about cabbages because they grow cabbages. But that's all. They don't want to, they don't, means in other words, the city people don't want to hear about cabbages, and the cabbage people don't want to hear about cities. Because according to the Varnashram people, there'd be no cities. Right? Dwarka, Hastinapur, you know, how you say, Ayodhya, like that. Were they, you know, growing cabbages? No, those are the cities. But they can't accommodate that you can follow Varnashram in the city. Does that make sense? So the point is wanting to understand the whole thing. So these ones have only taken that part of it. Or someone else takes the Kshatriya part, so therefore we've got to learn martial arts and be tough. right? You know, like that. Or Brahmins will just sit in our room and study all day and don't do anything else. You know, say, so they take what part they want, and that's all. Does that make sense? You know, so like that. Yes.
In manifestation of rasa, in relation to how does Yoga Maya play the role?
How does Yoga Maya play the role? Meaning?
It's like
you want to know if she does if it's more natural or she uses Stanislavski or, you know, what do you mean by how does she play her role? Reader's theater, or is it spontaneous, or it's actually practiced beforehand? Or?
In Damodar Lila, I've heard that when she's helping Krishna to express those expressions, fearfulness, and
that's a problem.
No problem. I want to understand whether devotee. The person who knows the rasa.
So you want to know if you're expressing your own or someone else has to help you. But, you know, I'm big now. I can express my own rasa. It's just like this. If Krishna is God, the supreme Lord and controller of everything, everything's coming from Him, everything is non-different from Him, how are you going to interact with Him? You understand? So even in Vaikuntha, there has to be a level of yoga maya so that they can function. So yoga maya is just creating that environment of that mood so that they can interact nicely. You know, so depending upon the general mood, she sees that it's there. And if the lila ever goes in a direction that shouldn't, just spontaneously goes, it's just like... Means who's a nicer boy than Krishna? Is there another nicer boy? No. Is there a nicer girl than Radharani? Okay. So now in a village where everybody gets married, so what would be the natural conclusion? Radha and Krishna get married. Right? So Mother Yashoda, therefore, then Radharani's there, kind of the time is coming for them to get married, so then she chooses Radharani as the, you know, proper, you know, bride for her son. Right? Puts the turmeric on her hands and everything like that. And Radharani wouldn't want to marry... Who would she want to marry? Abhimanyu or Krishna? Okay, Krishna. Okay. So, then, and what about any of the other gopis? Who would they want to marry? Krishna. Okay. So, therefore, nobody has a problem with it. Right? Mother Yashoda doesn't have a problem. You know, how you say? Vrishabhanu Maharaj wouldn't have a problem. Nobody has a problem. Right? Like that. Everybody's in ecstasy. But the problem is Vrindavan's supposed to be Parakya. Otherwise, you don't taste that highest rasa. Swakya is already being tasted in Dwarka. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, she has to adjust the situation. Because it's just naturally gone, just in this spontaneity. So then she adjusts it so that it ends up in a different way. So you know, everyone forgets about that, and Krishna doesn't get married, and the gopis marry someone else. Does that make sense? So they have to be married to someone else. Then it's actually, you know, Parakya. But he shouldn't be married to someone else. Otherwise, then you have a woman who does have the right to control him. You understand? So that's why gopis are married. He's not. Right? So just Yoga Maya arranged that. But otherwise, it's just she's making the environment, making sure the situations are correct. All the right people are there at the right time. But the experiences themselves, those are doing. So when he says that fearfulness, then, you know, because these arrangements are there. It's not that, you understand? Don't take it so far. That's why he's saying about empirical speculation. Because then the worry is am I doing this myself? Like that. The point is Krishna is there. Everybody is his servant, right? What's that, Chaitanya Charitamrita? Ekale Ishvara Krishna, Arasabhritya. Everybody else is servant. So everybody's just assisting in this path. So why not? It means everybody's doing it. Why just Yoga Maya? Right? Does that make sense? Yes. Between other
residents of
Vrindavan, not just between the devotee and Krishna, but sometimes between the other residents. Yeah, yeah, no, that's fine. That's why it says Krishna and his devotees, they're alambana. Like that. So you can get inspired by Krishna, get inspired by the devotees. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it works both ways. You had something? Means you appreciate more what's going on. So it's not just about the external activity that's going on. There's the whole flavor that's there. So it's just a matter of appreciating more of what's happening. Does that make sense? Okay. Krishna's beauty, quality, and pastimes are the mainstay of Madhurya Rasa. Initially, Rati manifests the ecstatic beauty of Krishna. And after the beauty has been relished, Bhava, in its variegatedness, turns around and reciprocally enhances Rati. Therefore, in conclusion, all the divisions of Bhava, Vibhava, Anubhava, Satviga Bhava, and Sanchari Bhava, Santri, Vyavachari Bhava, give support to Rati and vice versa. So Rati is that attraction, that attachment to Krishna. Right? That's just the way it means. Your Stai Bhava is the Rati, is your particular attraction to Krishna. Right? So in other words, the beauty and all that then is relished. At the same time, as that also nourishes the bhava itself. So you're able to appreciate it, and it makes it, increases it. That makes sense? The love for Krishna, they're able to appreciate, that means they experience that love for Krishna by the interaction, and at the same time that love is increased. Right? Both go on at once. Right? Does that make sense? Vrajanath, Gurudev, kindly explain to us the differences between Krishna Rati, loving attachment for Krishna, and Vishaya Rati, attachment for material objects of enjoyment, right? So, in other words, the Rati is there, so what's the difference between its spiritual manifestation and the material manifestation? Goswami, Vishaya Rati is worldly and gross. Krishna Rati is super mundane and purely spiritual. The roots of Krishna Rati are in the extraordinary, in transcendence. Worldly love is felt as pleasure when the lovers are united, and as pain is when they are separated. When Krishna Prema blossoms in the heart, the pure devotee's heart, rasa is churned up to produce nectarian bliss. In the mood of separation, this bliss acquires wonderful nuances. During the conversation between Sri Chaitanya and Srila Ramananda Rai, the latter composed a poem in reply to the question of Mahaprabhu. The poem, given in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila 8.194, describes the fascinating facets of Vipralamba, bliss and separation, in some detail. A whisper of grief is seemingly present in these lines, but in reality they are descriptions of intense exaltation. Footnote 4. Okay, so this is the actual quote. Right? Yeah. Alas, before we met, there was an initial attachment between us, brought about by an exchange of glances. In this way, attachment evolved. That attachment has gradually grown, and there is no limit to it. Now that attachment has become a natural consequence between ourselves. It is not that it is due to Krishna, the enjoyer, nor is it due to me, for I am the enjoyed. It is not like that. This attachment was made possible by mutual meeting. This mutual exchange of attraction is known as Manobhava, or Cupid. Krishna's mind and my mind have merged together. Now during this time of separation, it is very difficult to explain these loving affairs. My dear friend, though Krishna might have forgotten all these things, you can understand and bring this message to him. But during our first meeting, there was no messenger between us, nor did I request anyone to see him. Indeed, Cupid's five arrows were our via media. Now, right, because the five arrows are, I'm not sure exactly what they are, but they have a specific, I think they're the, yeah, I think they're the five aspects of Bhava, of Rati. But the arrows, the Krishna Bhanaya is the Abhideya aspect, right? In other words, it's the interaction that's there, and that means those five aspects of that Rati are what's making it work. Now, during this separation, that attraction has increased to another ecstatic state. My dear friend, please act as messenger on my behalf, because if one is in love with a beautiful person, this is the consequence. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport, these verses were originally composed and sung by Ramananda Rai himself. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur suggests that during the time of conjugal enjoyment, the attachment might be compared to Cupid himself. However, during the period of separation, Cupid becomes a messenger of highly elevated love. This is called prema vilas vivarta. When there is separation, conjugal enjoyment itself acts like a messenger, and that messenger was addressed by Srimati Radharani as a friend. The essence of this transaction is that transcendental loving affairs are as relishable during separation as during conjugal enjoyment. When Srimati Radharani was fully absorbed in love of Krishna, she mistook a black tamal tree for Krishna and embraced it. Such a mistake is called prema vilas vivarta. Everybody understand? Okay. Yeah. So now do we see the difference between what's being discussed here and what's being discussed in Chaitanya Charitamrita? Same topic. But the difference is we're trying to get here and understanding of just what's what, what's where, you know, what did the eye move or not, or was it the nostrils, or that kind of thing. And the other one, it's about what is the flavor and taste that's there and the nature of how that taste moves. You understand? But notice in here, it's all about the relationship. It's not about what they've done. That's a medium. It's about the relationship. So they're talking about the interaction with each other based on that attachment, not about what they're going to do, you know, or even worse, that, you know, well, you're getting what you want out of the relationship, but I'm not getting what I want. Right? That's kind of like bottom of the barrel stuff there, right? Does that make sense? Because it's nothing to do with what's the natural attachment. That's a whole different thing. So that's why we're saying in the material world, the material rati, that's why he says it's worldly and gross. Because it's not actually a really proper manifestation of it. The spiritual is super mundane and transcendental, or extraordinary in transcendence. All right? So it's very different. But the mechanics are the same. Yes?
So, in the material world, the attachment would be actually to the body itself, which is not the person.
It's to the body, but it's not even just to the body, it's to what you get from that body. Right? Because the body is there, and everybody else sees the body, but you're attached and they're not. Why? Because you like, let's say, the way they laugh or something. But the other persons don't like that kind of laugh. Right? You know, so they don't get something from it, so they don't like. You understand? But the point is being based on this attachment. There's no limit. Now the attachment becomes a natural consequence between us. So the attachment is the consequence. Not that we do this together, we do that together. It's that we have that attachment. That's why those things are done together. So therefore, Cupid is just being experienced there. But here now he's pointing out that Cupid is being that flavor, that feeling that is gained, that inspiration, that is being who's being asked to be the messenger. You know, so it's a whole, we're talking on a whole different realm here. Right? Okay. Rajanath, the more I hear about this topic, the thirstier I become to hear more. What are these rasas? Goswami. Srila Rupa Goswami writes in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindha 2564, the one principal rati of divine love is divided into five principal devotional rasas. Shanta, neutrality, passivity. Prita, satisfaction and servitude. Praya, affection. Vatsalya, protective indulgence. And Madhurya, conjugality? Okay. I guess you have to go with that one. There's no conjugality. See, the problem is because it should just be pronounced flat, but because they like to emphasize, somehow that's the Anglo-Saxon thing. You have to emphasize something, you know, so it has to be. Yes.
In the previous page.
We skipped a page.
No.
We skipped a little bit on the previous page. Oh, yeah. Rajanath, how many spiritual rasas are there? Goswami, there is one mukhya rati, which is divided into five principal rasas, plus the seven gona rasas, thus making a total of eight. Right? Does that make sense? So here's another way of looking at it. One, you'll be in one of the rasas, but actually mukhya rasa is one. In other words, there's adi rasa. Adi rasa contains the other five. So therefore that one has been split into five. Right? So that five and the seven makes 12, you can say, rasas. But at the same time, you can count it as those five are one, because that's the mukhya. And then the seven, so that way you get eight. Yes.
So that means that the residents of the spiritual world, they experience all of fives at some degree?
Not necessarily. No, it's just their particular one that they're in. It's not that they can't appreciate them all. Because otherwise, how would you appreciate another rasa unless it's all part of one rasa, unless there's some common ground? Right, because how parental rasa is very different from how you say, you know, friendship. Like friendship, it mentions here as affection, right? Vatsalya is protective indulgence. The affection is there, that's why you're protectively. Oh, you're going to let your kid do that, you know? But you know, the point is it's the affection that's underlying it. But it's what's going on? How you say. It's interesting, protective indulgence, right? Because they overly indulge in protecting, right? You know, like the kid when he goes out to play doesn't actually require that many clothes because he can't even move. That's why he takes them off. And his mom is going, "Why does he always take them off? Because you can't play in that many clothes, right?" Like that, you know. And then you want to make him keep it on so you could wrap him up with that, you know, how you say that, plastic wrap? What do you call it? Saran wrap or you know, stuff like that, you know. Make some holes in his head, you know, so they can play. So you can't take it off, you know. But it'd be really good because then if they throw snowballs at you, your clothes wouldn't get wet, so you know it has some advantages. So, does that make sense? In other words, rasa, mukhya rasa is one thing, but it has five aspects. So someone's in one of those aspects as a rasa, but the conjugal but each higher one includes all the lower ones. So the conjugal rasa includes them all. So they can, the higher one can always appreciate anything else. You know what I'm saying? Because they already include the one below it. So conjugal rasa includes everything. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay.
Which gopi represents the mukhya rasa?
Which gopi? It has to be one gopi.
No, but isn't there the eight main gopis represent one of these each? Or did I misunderstand?
No. That's a different thing altogether. That's a whole different consideration. Okay. Well, that'll probably come in the last chapter. Okay. You like that? You like that? Your bane hasn't been roasted enough yet. Well, don't worry, it'll get roasted. So saying is that the eight means mukhya ras because it includes all five aspects of rasa as one, and the gona rasas are the seven secondary rasas as seven. Why we say like that? Because why do you take the gona rasas as one? Because they're always changing. The mukhya ras never changes. So whichever it is, there is only one. But it's just one aspect of the overall one rasa. So that means one rasa has these five primary aspects and these seven secondary aspects. So you could say there's just rasa, there's one. So the adi rasa includes all of that. Does that make sense? The eight gopis, that's another thing. That's the eight kinds of, how you say, heroines. Like that. That's another. Like that.
Good thing I got that clear.
Okay. I mean, we're having enough trouble telling the difference between masculine and feminine rather than eight kinds of feminine. Like that, you know, so. One step at a time. Don't want to get ahead of yourself.
I was wondering which gopi was representing ghastliness.
No, it's not that. It's that Radharani is, you know, the complete whole.
Yeah.
Okay. Nice. The residents of Vrindavan, they used to remember Krishna's pastimes by, in poem form, they would engage Bhavas, and then they'd write some poetry, and then they'd be singing these poems, you know.
Yes.
And I was thinking maybe it'd be a good way to remember all these, because there's like the one, the seven, the 31, you know, the 40-something, you know. There's so many different terms, you know.
Okay, and then you'll put this together, and then you'll play lute or something, sing it all for us.
We can
try to get a few recorders to back you up.
I was trying to think about the best way to remember these. You know, I was thinking their poetry, and then there was a
harpsichord would be good also.
There was a play, you know, like somebody comes in and they're like all white, but they have like a such and such bob, and then somebody comes in and crosses into them. And then they become this Bob, you know, and then it's, you know, like that. But
yeah, so go ahead, write the play.
Write
the
play.
And then, you know, we can talk to Sony and see if they want to do anything with it. Okay, the one principal rati of divine love is divided into the five principal devotional rasas. Right, so rati is divided into the five rasas, right? Because rati means that attraction or attachment to Krishna. Each succeeding rasa is increasingly superior to the preceding one because it includes it. There are seven subordinate rasas: hasya, humor; adbhuta, wonder; vira, enthusiasm; chivalry, karuna; mercy. Enthusiasm. Vira is enthusiasm and chivalry. Karuna is mercy. Raudra, wrath. Bhayanaka, fear. And Bibhatsa, ghastliness. Vrajanath, Gurudev, I am keen to understand what persons are worthy of successfully fathoming rasa tattva. I guess we should have had this question at the beginning. Okay, only persons who are able to awaken Achintya Bhava by the profound Gada Samskar of Bhakti, as just described, are eligible candidates for Rasa Tattva. All others are barred. Srila Rupa Goswami writes in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 579, right? Everyone's waiting for more detail. Am I allowed here? On the basis of Bhava, Stai Bhava is established like a monument of breathtaking beauty and wonder. Is relished in the heart that is illuminated and cleansed by pure goodness. This is rasa. Okay. Vrajanath, which persons are considered unfit for rasa? Okay, in other words, awaken the Achintya Bhava of bhakti, right? So, but he says profound. In other words, the greater the, what is it, profundity of bhakti, then the greater the appreciation one will have to understanding rasa tattva. Right? Okay. Which To instruct an unfit person upon Hari Nam is Nam Aparad. Similarly, to reveal the subtleties of Rasa to an undeserving person is a gross Aparad. Gurudev, kindly prevent us from doing so, as we are already in a lost condition. Goswami, the practice of Vairagya, whilst rejecting Shuddha Bhakti, is in truth Falgu Vairagya, false renunciation. Similarly, the pursuit of Jnana, whilst rejecting Shuddha Bhakti, is Shushka Jnana, dry empirical mental speculation. Krishna Bhakti Ras is the greatest treasure of spiritual life. It must be very well protected from unworthy plunderers, just as valuable gems are always carefully guarded from thieves. The Falgu Vairagyas, Shobhatal Renunciates, Shushka Jnanis, dry empiricists, Falgu Nyayis, false rhetoricians, Karmis, fruit of workers, Vishayis, gross sensual materialists, Mayavadis, impersonalists, and monists are opposed to Shuddha Bhakti and are thus amongst the unworthy. Right. So does that resonate with anyone here? You want to leave at this time? Okay, so in other words, if one's not opposed to devotional service, one is actually sincerely wants to know devotional service, then one can hear the topic. But if one's not, you know, though manifesting seemingly good qualities of knowledge, renunciation, logic, you know, or material success, but one's still unqualified. Right? Qualification simply comes by one is actually interested in awaken the concept of bhakti. Okay. Gurudev, Vrajanath, Gurudev, we are so fortunate to hear these wonderful instructions from you. We will try to follow them sincerely. Vijaya, Gurudev, I maintain my family by reciting and lecturing on the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is actually a treatise on rasa. It is therefore an aparad to earn money. Is it therefore an aparad to earn money by reading Srimad Bhagavatam to the ordinary public? Goswami, indeed, the Bhagavatam is an excellent text, and the crown jewel of all scriptures, being the mature nectarian fruit of the entire Vedic literature. Simply abide by its espousal, especially this particular verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam 1.1.3. O devotees who are thoughtful experts on the science of rasa, O devotees who are the relishers of rasa, kindly continue even after liberation to savor the sublime and nectarian fruit of the Vedas known as the Srimad Bhagavatam. There's the point is it's something that's beyond. In other words, you'll really be able to relish it when you come to the liberated platform, because then there's no material elements of rasa getting in the way. But it's pointing out is you should continue to enjoy that. It didn't have a horn on the head, right? No, okay. Like that. And so, because then you'll really relish it, because it is a transcendental topic matter, like that. So then continue, because there's that element of, because jiva, tatastha means is neutral. So the tendency is we take the neutrality as a goal. But he's trying to point out as neutrality is not a goal. Means being absorbed in bhakti ras, that's the goal. Right? That love for Krishna is the goal, not just spirituality. So getting from the material to the spiritual, you should continue to go forward into devotion, into continuing relishing Srimad Bhagavatam. In other words, don't hear Srimad Bhagavatam to just get liberated, right? That's what they were talking about. The Pushti Margis are saying those who do that, that's the Maryada. They follow all the rules and regulations, they follow the devotional practices simply to just get to that neutral state of liberation. But those who actually are nourishing the devotion, that is that once they get to liberation, they continue that after liberation within the spiritual relationship. Is that something? Yes.
Maharaj, when he mentioned that he maintained his family by reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam.
Yes.
What is he exactly saying? Dakshini, or is he asking for...
No, it's dakshini. It's not, because, see, the thing is if you're doing one of the brahminical activities and you actually charge a fee for it, then you slowly, gradually reduce your ability in that science. You know? You may know the skill, but you can't use it properly. you know, your understanding of it goes away. So that's why the Brahmins just live by dakshin. So whatever comes, because it's up to the Lord, whatever you get. So they could give you a lot, they could give you a little. Right? Because otherwise, if he wants to maintain his ability to appreciate and understand and recite Bhagavatam, he has to work by dakshin. Otherwise, then you see people are really good. Everyone talks about how good they are. And then after a while, they're not so good. It wasn't that they were not good. You know, it's just, oh, they were never good. Just, you know, we thought he was. No, he was good. But because of charging, now he's not. Does that make sense? So it reduces, it goes down. So that's why it has to be dakshin. Any brahminical thing. But because of that, then people have to know what's the value of the brahminical culture and the activities. And so for they give a proper and suitable dakshin. Right? No, we're devotees, we get by the least as possible, right? Okay, let's give the guy $20, but I'll spend $120 on the perfume for the wife. Right, you know, like that. So that's the whole thing, is one has to make the distinction. There's no, so, you know, if the wife is so valuable that I'm willing to give $120 for the perfume, then how much more valuable is that knowledge by which I will be able to engage my wife and her perfume in Krishna's service? Like that. So, you know, it should be appropriate. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's the... what about if I only get $20 perfume? So that is a $20. Okay, go ahead.
And we give lecture to outside people and not to devotees.
No, but this is lecture. This is not reciting Bhagavatam. This means he goes through and explains all the stories and everything in Bhagavatam. So it's more of a, it's kind of, for these people, it's more of an entertainment. Of course, there's the spiritual benefit, so it kind of is good. Because if you just sit there and go and recite, they're not coming. It's because you can tell the stories, you can do the things. When they all start to fall asleep, you start a kirtan. You know, it's a whole arrangement. You know, there's prasad. It's a whole show.
So we can charge.
I think you missed the whole point. First, we were defining what is a Bhagavat Saptaha here. Right? Then the point is you can't charge. It has to be dakshin. Means if you're charging and it's going to the temple, then, you know, the temple can do stuff like that, though it's not ideal. But an individual can't. What's the... which synapse did we miss here?
Like, for example, like we give a seminar of Bhagavad Gita to some outside, like a businessman. So can we charge from that?
The point is with them, unless you charge, they won't take it seriously.
Yeah, that's true.
That's just because that's the culture and the etiquette.
So it's really charge.
It's the way it has to work. Do you understand? But that's not your goal. Your goal is that they understand it and apply it in their life and become devotees. And so then they'll be giving you much more. If your goal was simply to get the money off the seminar, then better you find another way to make money. You know what I'm saying? In other words, if I say we're having a free thing, then they won't take it seriously. But if I say it's, you know, it's $2,000 a head, you know, then they take it seriously. You know what I'm saying? And so they'll listen. They're paying $2,000. They'll listen. Right? You are charging $2,000, right? You're not charging $2,000 a head? You're getting a big, like, coliseum kind of thing, stadium, and then everybody is paying $2,000, right? 2,000 people paying $2,000, right? You're not making $4 to $5 million off of every program?
That's so great.
Oh, okay. The other guys are.
Yeah, but if we can, why not?
But you're missing the point. Why do the sub? Is it to raise money? Nowadays, it's all about what makes money. The point is, you know, so therefore, before it was spiritual life was something we applied in our life, and the other was, but this is grace, but we could sell this. So, but is the point to make the money, or is the point to engage the person? Like Prabhupada had life membership. It wasn't for raising money. It was for making devotees. Why? Because they could stay 3 days free in our temple. What does that mean? What are you going to do for 3 days in a Hare Krishna temple? Right? You're going to attend the program, go to the classes, take prasad, sit around and discuss with the devotees, do some service. What happens after 3 days of doing that? Right? You become purified. You might be interested in devotional service. You might surrender. Or at least you'll be interested to come back. Right? And then again and again. And then eventually you become a devotee. So it wasn't about money making, because those persons, if they're devotees, you're going to, means when Prabhupada made members for 1,111 rupees, he was making the richest men in India. You know, it'd be like in the West, going to the Rothschilds, and asking him for, you know, $1,000. You know what I'm saying? So that is the Rothschilds, the Rockefellers, all those things that the Birlas, the Bajorias, the Maheshwaras. These are who they were moving with, right? You know, you see in the movies about palaces, they lived in them. You know, that's normal. But it's because if they become devotees and interested, then naturally, because they're business people, then they'll do more. The point is to be engaged in service. So for them, giving money is their service, because they can't put in so much time and other things. So that's just one way to catch that community. You know, it's a side thing that you make money. But the main point was the preaching. We take it as money. So the point is having a Gita seminar, the point is that you're exposing people to the Gita, not that you're making money. Because if you're just making money, that means then what you speak at your seminar, they have to like, rather than you're actually giving the philosophy of Gita. You understand? Okay?
Yeah.
Okay, according to this edict, only eligible candidates for Rasa Tattva. According to this edict, the only eligible candidates for Rasa Tattva are the devotees who are bhavuka, thoughtful and expert, and the rasika, relishers of rasa. Right? So if you're not a relisher of rasa, at least if you're thoughtful, you know, and try to engage everything nicely in Krishna's service, then that'll also work. It'll be able to appreciate. No other person is permitted access. Therefore, my son, immediately abandon this method of earning your living. You are a thirsty searcher for rasa. Do not commit further aparad against rasa tattva. The Vedas, Taittiriya Upanishad 2.7, declare raso vai saha. Rasa is personified in Krishna. The scriptures offer several options for earning one's living. Follow their bona fide advice, but stop lecturing and reading the Bhagavatam for monetary gain. If you find a Rasika audience, certainly read the Bhagavad Purana to them with great jubilation, but without expectation of taking a fee, a donation, etc. Right? He's just reading for the men. If they give something nice like that, that's just the way it works. That's why only Brahmins can do these things. Right? Because they don't. The tendency is that people don't reciprocate nicely with the Brahmins, right? Why is it brought out that Yudhishthira was feeding 100,000 Brahmins at a time, first class prasad, nicely, and that was going on all day? Because most people don't do that. Right? Why is it mentioned that this king and his yajna, he was giving five times the normal dakshin to the Brahmins? Because people generally don't. It's rare to get him to give a normal dakshin. Does that make sense? Yeah. So these are brought out because it's important. But only Brahmins can function like that. Right? In other words, the Brahmin can sit and study and teach, even if he's getting nothing. But a Kshatriya can't run a country without tax. You understand? You can't do that. The Vaishya can't unless he's making profit. and the Shudra, unless he can express himself, then he's not going to be satisfied. But he has to make that profit, yes.
Is that because the Brahmana is getting nurtured on a different level?
It's because he's not so materially attached, so therefore he can function. Right? Means, of course, there is that higher level. But what means in the example we're giving here is because they're functioning on a much less material level. So if they have more, you use it, it's comfortable. But if you don't, life goes on. But with the others, it doesn't, they can't function like that. Right? You know what I'm saying? In other words, a Brahmin can be happily poor. Others may be poor, but they're not happy. Yeah. Okay. Okay, so that's it.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki,
Jai
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki,
Jai
Nitai Gaurabhaya.
Hari Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Saha Viryankaravavahai Tejasvi Navadhitamastu Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Hasyarati appears when funny words are spoken, when the dress looks odd, when actions are caricatured, and so on. Opening of the heart, widening of the eyes, flaring of the nostrils, trembling of the lips and cheeks characterize this mellow. This mellow is also generated by love of Krishna, combined with Sankocha Bhava, the emotion of hesitation. By seeing something wonderful or extraordinary, the heart expands in vishmaya, astonishment and wonder. The external symptoms are such as widening of the eyes and exclamations of appreciation. Okay. Okay. What was it? Okay. Oh, vishmaya. Okay, astonishment. That's the second one. Okay, so you see in all these there's external symptoms, but it's just a matter of means everything, there's the eternal mood, there's the external symptoms. So we have to be able to tell the difference by the category on what is kind of like the proportion or combination or where it's situated in the whole process of bhava. Right? Because otherwise we'll say, well, they all give physical symptoms, and they all have emotional symptoms, so aren't they all the same? But there's a slight difference, like that. So we have to be able to catch what is that subtlety. Okay? Okay. The external symptom. Okay. Utsaha. So that's the next one, which was eagerness. Is the resolute enthusiasm of the mind to engage in grand projects, which are eulogized by stalwart saints. This mellow displays symptoms such as urgency in activity, impatience, great exertion, and fervor. In Krodharati, eagerness, shoka, karuna, lamentation. Okay. In Krodharati, the heart burns in rage on account of pratikula bhav. That means a bhava that's not favorable. Displeasing and unfavorable feelings. This mellow displays symptoms such as callous in temperament, frowning, and livid eye expressions. Bhayarati is caused by seeing a terrifying scene where the heart palpitates and with restless apprehension. This mellow displays symptoms such as the endeavor to conceal oneself, dryness of the heart, and flight from the scene. Jugupsa rati is evoked by something contemptuous, leading to disgust. Certain physical transformations are exhibited in this rati, such as spitting, grimacing, and spontaneous words of vilification. These feelings are only considered transcendental rati when they are favorably disposed to Krishna. They are not, they are simply the mundane foibles of the heart of an ordinary mortal. Right? In other words, it's favorable to Krishna because there's something that's disgusting that's opposed to Krishna, and then you're upset with that. Then it's useful. Otherwise, if it's directed at... See, the other ones can be directed towards Krishna, but this one is not directed towards Krishna. It can be favorable to Krishna, but not directed towards him. Rajana, how many bhavas are there in Bhakti Rasa? Goswami. There are 8 Stai Bhavas, 33 Sanchari Bhavas, 8 Sattvika Bhavas, which total 49. When these Bhavas are mundane, they stem from the 3 modes of material nature and become the cause of fleeting joys and sorrows. However, when they are dovetailed with Krishna, they become transcendental to the material modes and are sources of profound immortal bliss. Even in shoka, deep despondency, they give forth immense pleasure. So here's one of the major elements that's there, is that when they're on the transcendental platform, then they're fully favorable and they give the transcendental response. When they're not, when they're functioning on the material platform, then they're functioning under the modes of nature. So the mode of goodness, if it's functioning under the mode of goodness, it will basically have the same form as that which you'll see in the spiritual world. But it doesn't have the same attitude because it's for oneself. Though this element of duty and of what you're supposed to do, sacrifice, all the auspicious qualities will be there, but it's for yourself. So it still won't have that same degree of intensity at all. Right? But mode of passion, then it starts to get more perverted because you're doing it for yourself. So whether you're going to actually be following all the rules or not, because it's for yourself, then if it's passion and goodness, it may have the form of, but the attitude will be wrong, so it'll be out of balance. Right? If the passion's more, then you'll, as long as you're getting your result, you'll follow the normal form, but when you're not, you'll change it. Because the point is, it's just to get what you want. Right? As it drops down into ignorance, then it may even look backwards from what it's supposed to be. Right? So that's the problem, is this whole thing's still going on the same, but because in the modes of nature, it doesn't take on its natural form. Right?
All right. In the previous paragraph, describing the symptoms of Utsaha and Krodha, we can see that very clearly in a very realized soul like Prabhupada, his enthusiasm to do, his anger when someone was out of pleasing Krishna.
Yeah, because that's just the natural forms. Because they do have natural forms. You know, but then, you know, others, natural forms, natural placement of them, you know. But then the problem is that when you're not dealing on this transcendental platform, you know, or at least on the mode of goodness, then it starts to become, it becomes strange. You don't know what it is. Just like in the modern, it doesn't matter what, if you're, let's say you're describing your interaction with somebody, right? It doesn't matter what you say. There are words that you can take and turn it exactly 180 degrees from your actual intent. And the people will do it with such conviction. because it's not actually to do with rasa. It's to do with their more material ethics to get done what they want to get profit from. But it'll be presented as it's something special. Like that. Does that make sense? It's always the way it is. The materials, because he doesn't know what rasa is, he doesn't mind moving it around as he pleases. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, let's say, you know, you have all the parts of a car, right? And, you know, you have some kids come in. They'll put it together however they like. You know, the carburetor will look really good on the dashboard. You know, like that, you know. So, you know, stuff like that. You know, they'll sit on the front hood and they'll have the steering wheel. You know, all these things are fun. Maybe even better sitting on the roof. You know, it's just, it doesn't matter to them. It's just some fun. So that's generally what people do with rasa. They put it anywhere they want, and then, you know, it's like we're saying, well, it's physical, so why not all the physical things will stick in one place? Right? Because it's all about ease, how it would just be easy for me, not about the difficulty it comes to actually discern the difference between the two. You know? Does that make sense? Like, you're taking a vegetable, and you're making basically a somewhat dry subject. Okay? Now, if I take it, make the chance, put in the subject, and then cook it like that, right, I'll get one effect. If I boil the subject first, then make the chance and put it in, I get a different effect. So in Bengali, they're actually two different preparations. So the spicing and the vegetables may be exactly the same, but the effect will be totally different. Does that make sense? So those kind of subtleties, then if you can't tell them, you can't tell the difference between the things. So that's the whole point in the rasa. There's a difference in these. Like that is where the thing is at. Because as mentioned, it's the rasa that is the one that's controlling all the other bhavas. Right? So even though the you see physical symptoms from the sthayi bhava or from these gona ratis, right? But the point is they're the one that's controlling everything else. You know what I'm saying? Like the fear is there, but that fear then has its area that you're afraid of. Right? And then which one has made you afraid? And then what are the secondary bodily symptoms that will come from Anubhava, or the Sanchari Bhava, or the different things from the Sattvika Bhava? Right? But it's the prominent. Does that make sense? So, but you know, the Anubhava also has physical, but that's just the normal kind of reactions and going and all that, so you can tell what the... But then the Sattvika Bhavas, they're much more intense. Because there, even though it's physical, it's the life air is off. That's what causes it. While in the Anubhava, the life airs aren't out of place, or in the Mukhya Gona Rati, they're not out of place. Does that make sense? So that's the thing: is these subtleties are important. Otherwise, one won't catch what rasa is. They say, "Oh, this is complicated." No, this is simple. Right? Complicated is when you have to deal with all of them at once. We're just studying one at a time. That's simple. Does that make sense? Yeah.
So when looking at a pure devotee like Prabhupada, many times we didn't catch the subtlety of the rasa going on, but we get the external attitude. External.
Yeah. Like that. Like that. So it's just so much more clear, you know, like the things like the eyes widening or all those different things. You see it much more there, you know. When you're dealing with kids, you see it more also, but it's not so sophisticated. But the natural thing is those are the natural responses. Just as you grow up, they should become more sophisticated, you know, not that they disappear, you know, like in the modern, yes.
We learned that Brahmana should be very composed in their expressions. How this is reconciled with the rasa?
Yeah, it just means it's more subtle.
So they don't open eyes?
No, it's the whole overall. Let's give an example. Okay, Yudhishthira Maharaj, you know, something good happens. What do you see? right? Basically nothing, a little smile. Okay, now, you know, the, you know, no offense here, the Brazilian soccer player makes a goal. What happens? Yeah. Yeah, it's the whole thing. Ah, the T-shirt, this, the that, the sliding on the ground, you know, the whole thing. So that's the difference in the nature of the person. The first-class person, you'll just get that little smile. Second class will be that and a little bit more. You know, third class, you get the whole drama. You know, yes.
My teacher of literacy would say, you know how you see that the group of Brazilians are coming? That little creek with all the fishes jumping up and down.
Okay.
It's them coming.
Okay, because they're coming up the creek. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, so that's the thing. But of course, if at the game the guy kicks a goal and then there's this slight little smile like that, I don't think the crowds would be very impressed. You know? No one's going to pay money to see a little smile. You know, they want to see the whole, you know, riot. You know. So that's. That you'll have there, but it's still the same symptoms, but just very subtle, you know. That's all. But what we're mentioning is, like, you know, the political. You're sitting there and you're talking to them, and they're all so nice and wonderful, and then you find out later they hated everything you say, and they're going to get you for it, you know. So that's the problem, is that, you know, but the same people are talking community and this and that, you know, so it's a problem. Yeah. Okay. Srila Rupa Goswami writes that Krishna and his dear devotees, headed by the gopis, act as the alambana, beloved and lovers, the foundation of bhakti rasa, and therefore generate mutual rati in the form of 8 stai bhavas of loving attachment in this way. Okay. So we get what it means by the 8 stai bhavas. Because we've mentioned stai bhavas as 5. So what's the 8?
Is it 1 mukhya rati and...
Yes, 1 mukhya and 7 gona. Because the mukhya, there'll only be 1. But the 7, because they're transitory, anybody may have them. Mm. Like that.
Maharaj?
Yes.
Why the anubhavas and the vibhavas are not mentioned among the bhaktiras?
Why the 8 bhavas? Because...
anubhava and vibhava.
Because it's the vibhava is what causes it, and the anubhava is just the side things that come. But your main things that are going on is the stai bhavas, the sanchari, and the satvikas. That's what you'll see. Because the vibhava just means that's what is coming up from. Right here. Srila Rupa Goswami writes that Krishna and his dear devotees, headed by the gopis, act as the alambana. So it's Krishna and his devotees, they're the alambana. Right, they're the basis of the rasa being exchanged, right? In this way, Krishna and his devotees are the karana, cause of the rasa of rati, spiritual love. The 8 sattvika bhavas causing the 8 sattvika vikars, transcendental bodily transformations, beginning with stamba, being stunned in ecstasy, are counted among the karya, effects of rati. And the 33 Vyabhachari Bhavas, Sanchari Bhavas, beginning with Nirveda, indifference to material enjoyment, act as Sahaya, assistance of this Rati. However, in the final analysis, when Rasa is evidently manifest, these various manifestations of Rati are no longer described as Karana, cause, Karya, effect, and Sahaya, assistance, but as Vibhava, instinctive causes of ecstasy. Vibhav has the power to make these manifestations of rati increasingly competent to relish the Vishaya, Sri Krishna. Therefore, the Acharyas also categorize the many various manifestations of rati as vibhava, instigative causes of bhava. Furthermore, because nritya, dancing, and other similar manifestations of rati magnify and demonstrate vibhava, They are called anubhavas, resultant manifestations of bhava. Right? So you have all these that you, in other words, when you're analyzing it, you go through them one at a time like this, you see the categories, you see each, but when it's manifesting, then they basically just call it vibhava. Right? Because everything that happens will be the stimulus for the next aspect of rasa. Does that make sense? Right. So, in other words, let's say the devotee does something that stimulates that affection in Krishna, and then that manifests as one of the other aspects of bhava. Seeing that devotee, then he becomes inspired, and then therefore so many symptoms. And then seeing those symptoms, then the other devotees in Krishna become, you understand? So therefore, all it is a constant element of each one nourishing the other's rasa. So it's always increasing, always developing. So therefore you can say it's vibhava. Does that make sense? And then you'll say anubhava, what are the other, those secondary symptoms? Right? So anubhava can mean just that particular group, but also if you're doing a dynamic, manifestation of the rasa, then vibhava is everything that's you're inspired by. Anubhava will simply be those what is the particular physical symptom of the emotion that has been sparked by that. Does that make sense? So that means even your vavichari, the asanchari bhavas, because they give a physical reaction, then that would be the anubhava. And you know that mood of the asanchari bhava is what it's displaying. But it's a mood that's in sanchari, not in anu, or maybe you can see the stai bhava, but I mean not the stai, the sattvika bhava, you know, that's the physical, you know, but you know what the mood is, you understand? But they're just different categories of kinds of reactions. So, because it's an emotional mood and it has a physical reaction, therefore it can be categorized as a general aspect, as anubhava, right? So then in the rasa, what's going on, what you'll see is vibhava, anubhava. Does that make sense? But it's based on the particular stai bhava. Does that make sense? So in other words, there's going to be that which is inspiring the rasa and that which is the physical symptoms of the emotional response to that inspiration. Does that make sense? So that way then, the means each one is a vibhava, and each one is an anubhava. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's what will be going on in the dynamic. Right. That's why the question comes up before. But that'll cause the physical reaction. But that's only in when the bhava is rolling. Right? Does that make sense? But when you're analyzing, there's different aspects because these different kinds of emotions, which are coming from different reasons, those give, of course, they have the emotion and the physical response. Does that make sense? So therefore, all the five combined together, that's rasa. Okay? But what you're going to see is, what's the inspiration, what's the physical symptom? Okay? Yes? No? In other words, you have to be able to accommodate. That's why our philosophy is so great. You have to be able to accommodate that anubhava is a specific thing and anubhava is the general thing. You know, a vibhava is a specific thing, but a vibhava is the general thing. Right? And the same thing that has a specific can be in the general category, the other category. Right? It all works at once. Does this make sense or it doesn't make sense?
Is the masculine feminine, they alternate?
Masculine and feminine, it's just depending on which one you're taking as prominent, then it switches. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, based on the mood of Krishna, right, he said something stupid. So the gopis respond to that, you know, as the feminine thing, as anger. But now, that will switch because now they're taking the aggressive thing of applying that anger on Krishna. depending upon his mood, how to apply the anger that it fits the mood that's there. So it's actually taking that masculine movement. You know what I'm saying? Because they're responding to how Krishna deals. Because Krishna says, as you surrender, I reciprocate. That's the masculine position. But now how he's done, then they take that. And then depending on that, then he takes that. So at every mood, there's whoever's starting it, that's the masculine, the other is the feminine. And then they respond, that takes the masculine, the other is the feminine. But the masculine has an overall flavor, the feminine has an overall flavor. You know what I'm saying? So therefore you can tell the difference. You can tell who's the male, who's the female in the relationship. But the actual dynamic of it is constantly switching. Does that make sense? That's why it becomes more difficult. That's why a car is a lot easier than people. Like that. But that technical aspect of the mechanics is the same. But because it's not conscious, it's not that you sit there and, you know, you're tightening the spark plug and you do it a little too tight, you know, and then you know, something, you know, whatever it is, you know, one of the wires comes up and whacks you in the head or something. You know. It doesn't do that, you know. It just breaks, you know, like that. Yes?
You already answered my question.
I already answered. Okay. Is that okay? Okay, therefore the Acharyas also categorized the many various manifestations of Rati as Vibhava, instinctive causes of Bhava. Isn't that another way of saying that?
Instinctive.
Yeah, that's the more. Instinctive, I think, is the more. Yeah, it's, you don't
instigate something.
Yeah. No, but I'm just saying it's many words in English. Those who are more edumacated, then they somehow use that form of it. That kind of, there's a few words like that. Okay. Furthermore, because Nritya dancing and other similar manifestations of Rati magnify and demonstrate Vibhava, they are called Anubhavas, right? So in other words, Vibhava is that being inspired in the rasa. So that's so that you know that they're inspired, there is a physical manifestation, right? So that's why it's called the Anubhava. Because the main thing is the mood that comes up from being inspired. Right? So wherever the position that mood, that's the mood that's come up, and it has a physical manifestation. So through the Anubhava, you can tell what is the particular mood being experienced in the Vibhava. Right? Yes. Does that make sense? Okay. As pure transcendental bhava manifests the eight sattvika vikaras, these are called sattvika bhavas. The various bhavas which inject the 33 symptoms, beginning with nirveda into anubhava rati and vibhava rati, and thus breathe impetus and variegatedness into them, are known as the 33 sanchari bhavas. Simulative, exciting ecstasies. Ultimately, the Shuddha Bhaktas and Acharyas have identified Vibhava as the root cause of bhakti. In truth, the transcendental emotion of bhava being productive of and equivalent to rati is a subject of inconceivable nature and the arena of the purest form of bhakti. Because it says here, Krishna and his devotees, they're the cause, they are Vibhava. Right, they're alambana, right? So any one of whichever one you're focusing on, that's the udipan. Does that make sense? So your alambana is that whole group. Which one is the one that you're noticing at the time? Then that's there. So that means the devotees themselves, Krishna himself, the devotees themselves. So however they're responding according to the bhavas. But it's they themselves that's the important thing. It's not the bhava. It's they themselves. Does that make sense? That's the difference. In the material world, you're inspired, someone's done something very great or noble, but it's not exactly the person that you care about. It's the impersonal aspect of that quality. You know, the greatness, the sacrifice. You know, we'll go on about the sacrifice of this or that. We won't actually talk about the person. You know, it's like that, because we don't even know. It's not important, but you have to have a medium for it. That's the difference. Well, in the spiritual world, it's actually the person. And these qualities, these are all the qualities they have. So whichever, they themselves are the Lumbana, and then all these secondary qualities, I mean, you know, all these things that they have, those are just the various aspects of them that you're inspired by. Which one's manifesting? Like Krishna's beauty is manifesting. So that's the beauty is the Udipan, right? Or his compassion, or his cleverness, you know? Does that make sense? Whatever it is, so all that's a Lumbana. Which one is manifesting, that's the Udipan. Right? Yes?
When you talk about truth for the Western thought, it's hard to accommodate that the truth is a person which manifests that element of truth. We talk about something such.
No, because truth, in the modern, truth is facts. That's all. Just like if I didn't tell you the truth, the facts, then I'm lying. Right? Let's say I, you know, where are you going? Oh, I'm going to the market. Right? But I didn't say what I'm doing in the market or anything like that. So I didn't tell you all the facts. So then when you get back later, because some friend saw you wherever you were and what you were doing, and they tell me, and so that's, in my mind, different than what you said. You did go to the market. But I take you go to the market to buy some vegetables or this, but you went to the market to do something else. Right? So therefore, when you come back, I'll say, why did you lie to me? You know what I'm saying? But it's like, where's the lie? Lie means to tell not truth. Right? But it's taken, if all the facts aren't presented, that's false. Because it's all about facts. It's not about actually the mood and all that. So reality is the mood. So reality was the intent why one went to the market. You need to go to the market to accomplish that intent. You know, does that make sense? So how can I trust? But trust what? It's just a matter of trust facts. What about the person? Like you're saying, it's not actually about the person. That's the thing. That's why we're saying is that the actual mukya rasas aren't really a prominent in the material world. It's all the guna rasas. Right? And so those become the basis for all the other. Does that make sense? So that's why the Vedic has what's dharma, so that there's much more functioning, at least mechanically, according to the mukya ras. Right? So there's a little bit more of an experience. But if one drops the Vedic culture, then how often is it going to be the mukya ras manifests? You know? I mean, I think it was in England. I was sitting in somebody's house looking out the window, you know, second floor. And I see this lady going by, you know, high heels, really super tight pants, you know, low what do they call, low riders or something, you know, like that. It means, you know, basically, you know, above your belt and below your belly button, everything sticks out. You know, high tank top like that, super tight, you know, all kinds of other things on, hair, makeup, everything. Okay, so that's okay, that's not weird, right? Is that weird? Not for England. No, it's not weird. What was weird is she was pushing a pram. So that's the mom. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, you know, that mom, that doesn't go together. You know, like that, you know. Before mom, yes. But after mom, you kind of expect, you know, it doesn't match. So that's the thing. So how do you taste the rasas? How do you know, it just doesn't work. Does that make sense? That's the difficult thing. Okay. So as pure transcendental bhava manifests the vikaras, right? Then injected into that are the 33 sanchari bhavas. Right. In other words, when there's these physical symptoms, then there's these subtler aspects of the symptoms, right? Because everything's coming up and changing. But the sanchari bhavas are things within one more. Let's say you have a general emotion, but there's other things that can come up within that. Does that make sense? Let's say you're being indifferent, but you can also be arrogantly indifferent, or you can be sadly indifferent, or you understand? So those are the sanchari. So they're the finer ones that get are within the other bigger one. Right? But that's why they're aggressive, because they're the ones that are moving. They're the ones that are... Right? Does this make sense?
So this is explanation of how spiritual society functions.
Yes.
And then we have to practice this before we go there. Otherwise, we can't really go there because there's no place for...
It means you'll be taught it there. They'll train you out of there. But the point is it's if you're absorbed in Krishna, these things will be natural. Now, exactly what are the details? That's why it says you follow in the footstep of a resident of Vrindavan. Right? Because then you are aware of how they do things, what they do. You understand? So, therefore, that general thing of... If you have the mood of following and that absorption in Krishna... then all the other details will be worked out. Because these are natural. The point is if that affection for Krishna comes up, that's these things manifest. So the main thing is that love for Krishna is the central feature. And that will be there according to the particular devotee that you're following. Does that make sense? So we have the thing is I'm servant of the servant of Krishna. Right? And I value the Vaishnava association, so I deal as nicely as possible. Then you're qualified to function within the spiritual environment. Does that make sense? So other details and skills will be taught. So it may be you would respond in one way, but they'll tell you don't respond like that. You do like this. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like, you know, Krishna's coming. One of the go, wow, Krishna's coming. It's bang. You know, it says we don't do that. We're in public. You know, so then everybody's there. You know, then you put on that, you know, what is it, Nirveda? Yeah, Nirveda. You know, which is in what do you call it? Where you're not caring.
Indifference.
Right? You know what I'm saying? That's just what girls do. You know, that's just how it works. Does that make sense? It's just like, we gave an example. There's two male, big male lions sitting down at the water hole, right? You know, just, you know, but I guess it's, you know, it's warm and they're a bit lazy and probably not overly hungry. So they're just sitting there hanging out. And so then a female lion walks by behind them and over to the side so they can see. But she's completely ignoring them. But unfortunately, they just go on in their guy bov, right? And they don't even notice her. So having walked by, she's not noticing. But then after she does her walk, and they should have noticed, they don't. She turns around, comes back over until she's right here. The male lion doesn't notice her. Then he turns, and then she smacks him in the face, you know, for being so, you know, such a dweeb, you know, like that. And then walks off in indifference again, you know, but now he's watching, you know, what happened, you know, like that, you know. So it's, does that make sense? At least it makes sense to half the audience. Right? The other half is going, I don't understand. Because the point is the indifference doesn't mean that you're not aware. It's just a front to put on as if you're not. You know? So, like that. You know, so it's like Krishna's playing the boatman and the gopis come down. He just is fiddling with his boat. He knows they're there. He knows they want to ride, but he pretends as if he's busy with his boat. You know, and then they have to, you know, again and again try to get his attention. You know, and it's only when they get really rough, okay, then it's, yes, you know, it's like, you know, I'm busy with my boat, you know, what's your problem? You know, like that, we need a ride. No, my boat's not ready, I'm sorry. You know, like that kind of, you know, so they have fun. So it's used, but it's something within something else. You can see it's not the major feeling. It's a subtler feeling that's adding flavor to the more major feeling. That's what makes it sanctuary. Does that make sense? Yeah. So in other words, you have so many layers. You have the main feeling. You have what's inspired the feeling. You have the other physical symptoms that are manifesting from that feeling. And then you have the subtle ones on top of that that are going changing more quickly. So you have really quickly changing, you have more slowly changing, and you have the fixed. So does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Scriptures such as the Mahabharata have defied Bhava. Deified Bhava as transcendentally pure and spotless, enthroning it upon a pedestal beyond the jurisdiction of empirical speculation and analysis. Therefore, the scriptures recommend that one not to encroach upon this inconceivable knowledge through inductive philosophy and rhetoric. Rati is the enchanting element in the paradigm of rasa. It colors Krishna's beauty, quality, and pastimes with the hues of Vibhava, thus nourishing Vibhava along with itself. Right. So in other words, it's nourishing the inspiration, it's nourishing the feeling itself. Right. So it's coloring all these different things. Krishna's beauty, qualities, pastimes, because it colors it with that particular attraction. Like Krishna's beauty is there. Mother Yashoda appreciates that, but differently, it's a different hue than the gopis appreciate it. Right? Or that the cowherd boys appreciate it. Right? You know, a guy dresses up nice, the other guys appreciate it. Right? But it's a different flavor than your mom appreciating it. It's a different flavor than the girls appreciate it. Right? So those are all the different hues that are there. But the Vibhava is the same. It's still Krishna looking beautiful. Right? But the response, the emotional response you'll get from that will be different according to that. Right? So there'll be different manifestations of that. And within that, then there'll be the subtleties of the sanctuary. You know, it's like the guy will come out, you think, wow, he looks good. But then you might use the element of Nirveda, you know. Well, I don't know, you know. Like that. He says, really? It looks bad? No, I'm just joking. Yeah, like that. And then it goes into Hasya. Then it goes into the secondary Rasa. Then, you understand? It's just constantly moving. So that's the point, is that if it's within the context that's natural for that Rasa, then it's appreciated. But if it goes outside of that Rasa, then it's Rasa Bas. It doesn't match. So that's why you're moving with people that are like-minded, because you can appreciate how the rasa moves. Does that make sense? Yes.
Here we learn how to do it theoretically more, and there we will learn how to do it practically just by following.
Yeah, but if you're not aware of it, you don't understand what it is you're appreciating. You know, in other words, it's not just Krishna's form you're appreciating. It's that whole mood, it's the rasa, that's there, and so you're interacting with Krishna based on that. Otherwise, how much do you talk about what he's dressing on? If that's the basis of the rasa, how far does it go? You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know, it means, in other words, if there's not people that are constantly producing new, you know, programs and applications, you know, for whatever gizmo you have, nerds would run out of things to talk about and they would have no relationship. You understand? Because there's nothing there to talk about. There's no third party. But what we're talking about is your relationship is first party. Right? But it's all these other things, they add to that. So that's the difference. In the material world, it's about that. In the spiritual world, it's about the person. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like the mom is saying, you can't wear that. Why not? Because for the kid in his circle, that will work great. But for the mom in her circle, if her friends see that her kid's dressed like that, they'll complain to her, it'll mess up her circle. So it's not about the person. It's about what that person represents within their world. You know what I'm saying? Well, in the spiritual world, it's about the person. That's the difference. The mechanics are the same. But there's the difference is that it's being applied. So therefore, what we're learning from all this is that the concept of relationship is much deeper than we're looking at it in the material world. But, as it points out, because Mahabharata has deified bhava, it puts it that you don't even discuss it. Right? That's the point, is because who is the Mahabharata for? It's for a general group of persons. So you don't want it to be used by empirical speculation. Right? In other words, those who are simply based on the senses, you don't want them speculating on rasa. So that's why it's deified. But when you're getting into the bhakti scriptures, then it can be discussed from that point of respect of it. Work? I used the word okay.
I didn't know.
Oh, didn't know the word. I said, kind of okay.
It didn't make sense.
Oh, okay. Okay. Right, because the point is it's not a matter of logic and argument, you know, because, does that make sense? It means, in other words, like when we first started the discussion, then it's logical, that's an emotion and a physical response, and this is an emotion and a physical response, aren't they the same thing? Right? So it's not a matter of logic, it's a matter of that appreciation of what it is, the subtleties of the rasa. And then as we go over the days, then we start to be able to see the difference and appreciate, and we get, you know, how things are layered on top of each other, and then today, you know, completely, defining it in a broader category where everything gets thrown into the same thing. We're trying to throw it into the same thing, but we're not allowed. But the acharyas throw it all together, but you have to know how to do that. Does that make sense? Yes.
Could I say that previously you mentioned that culture is an unfold of philosophy.
Culture is?
Unfold is the demonstration of the outcome.
Yes, yes.
So, also when we try to analyze culture deeply, sometimes we lose elements of it because it's more like it's lived than actually fully.
Because when you're analyzing, it's static. That's why it's different. We're going through here. This is not what we would call... This is the analysis of rasa. I mean, even the chapter is called that, right? It's the analysis of rasa. Right? For the consideration. Okay, like that. Is that you're analyzing it, because when you're analyzing it, it's not dynamic. Right? It's in here because of that love. There's that natural spontaneity. You see this in the one person, that evokes that in you. Them seeing that, it evokes that in them. It just keeps going unlimitedly. But this is the science of how it works. You know. But the point is their analyzation is not just to get an intellectual understanding. Their analyzation is they see this symptom, so this means this, so therefore then you know how to respond or how, you know, what to do. Does that make sense? So therefore the analyzation is there but it's dynamic because it's being applied, but we're just becoming aware that it exists. Is that okay?
I mean, in our case of our society, that the culture, the Vedic culture itself, the application of it sometimes seems a bit far, because it's hard to actually get down to those reciprocations.
But these come naturally. That's the thing, is these are spontaneous. But what is there? It means Rupa Goswami writes that Krishna and his dear devotees, headed by the gopis, act as the alambana, beloved and lovers, the foundation of bhakti rasa, and therefore generate mutual rati in the form of 8 sthayi bhavas of loving attachment. Okay? Now, do they have authority issues? No. Do they feel that this manifestation of rati is for my happiness? Do you understand? Do they think I need to be in control of this so that I can be happy? Okay? Do you understand? So that's where the Vedic getting involved is not this. This is not the problem. This will come naturally. The problem is those basic things, because authority, you know, why we should follow the scriptures, that's old, that's archaic, that's ancient. No, it's authority. That's why we don't want to follow it. We'll say, give an example, oh, it's old, so that's why I don't want to follow it. Yeah? But, and then how many millions of people are freaking out and booking the airlines and packing the streets when there's an Olympic? Right? How old is the Olympics? How many thousands of years old? So it's not old that we have a problem with. Right? Christianity, that's 2,000 years old. People don't seem to have a problem with it. Right? Judaism goes back, you know, 4,000 years or so. Maybe more. You know what I'm saying?
Wearing pants.
Huh?
Wearing pants.
Yeah, they've been wearing pants for a long time. Right? You know? You know, kilts have not caught on yet, right? You know, so.
Any day now.
Any day now, yeah, any day now. Does that make sense? So the point is that we just use that as, oh yeah, it's old. Yeah, we don't want anything old. You know, as if it's like a vegetable or something. It's a perishable that if it gets too old, it's not there. But like, you know, you bring the wine list, you know, and the guy looks at it and says, don't you have anything new? You know, why all this old stuff? You know? Does that make sense? You know, it's like, so that's the whole thing, is it's you know what I'm saying? It's just a trick. Because the real thing is this is authority, and I don't want to not be in control. I want to be able to say what I want to do. That's the real reason the Vedic system has a problem. Otherwise, is it so hard to figure out? You know what I'm saying? It's like, it's very simple. There's eight stations there, and they have pretty much a simple concept of what their areas are, but no one can figure it out. Why is that? Because no one wants to figure it out. Just like, how hard is it to clean up the room, right? But the kid's been sitting there for an hour. See, all he has to do is when he cleans his room, he can go out and play. But he's been sitting there for an hour. Why? Because he can't clean up the room, can't figure out how to clean up the room. He could clean the room in 5 minutes. He doesn't want to clean the room. That's why he's sitting there. And he's got a million excuses. He's got reasons why he shouldn't clean the room. Right? That's the point. Because these things, it's not that these things will come naturally. If you're in the natural purified state, these schemes come automatically. In fact, they're going on now. But as described before in the rasa, is that when it manifests, because it has a nature, everything has a nature, it's either manifest in its ideal form or something not ideal. So when it's manifest through something not ideal, it doesn't really come out so well. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Okay, so just clarify. So the difficulty wouldn't be actually understanding how the system runs, but more wanting to follow.
Yeah. Once you want to know, then it'll be very quick. Because then what would you do? There'd be lots of discussion and symposium on figuring this out. Right? But it's not. Like, just like, let's say, I don't know, here we had... I think it was last year, it was the year before. There was a whole thing somehow that ended up here, like that, that it was a Varnashram discussion of all the practicing Varnashramites, you know, like that, and sit down. So everyone would introduce themselves and said something about the project or what they're doing or what they felt was important in Varnashram. Everybody's talking about carrots and sabji, you know, like that. Like that, a couple about cows. And when it got to me, I started talking the philosophy of the Varnashram and how that. And then I was, you know, told, says, okay, nice, but there's other people that have to talk, you know. It's like they want to talk about their carrots. They didn't want to hear the philosophy of Varnashram. And these are the practicing Varnashramites. So that's the point. How you practice a culture if you don't know the philosophy? Because Varnashram is a lot more than cabbages. You know? But that's the problem. Who wants to be part of Varnashram? That means how many devotees are from a rural background and that's where they're situated? Very few. Even if you go to an ISKCON farm, how rural is it? You know what I'm saying? A few are. Right? You go out to Belgaum, it is in the middle of nowhere. You know, so, and everything runs by that. But most places, you know, they got nice, you know, asphalt things up to their things where they park their cars, they got their garages, they got that, they work in town, they do all the whole thing. You know what I'm saying? So, therefore, who wants to hear about growing cabbages? Who wants to be the cabbage grower? You know what I'm saying?
Why are you talking about that?
Huh?
Why would these people talk about that if nobody wants to hear?
Well, they want to talk about cabbages because they grow cabbages. But that's all. They don't want to, they don't, means in other words, the city people don't want to hear about the about cabbages, and the cabbage people don't want to hear about cities. Because according to the Varnashram people, there'll be no cities. Right? Dwarka, Hastinapur, you know, how you say, Ayodhya, like that. Were they you know, growing cabbages? No, those are the cities. But they can't accommodate that you can follow Varnashram in the city. Does that make sense? So the point is wanting to understand the whole thing. So these ones have only taken that part of it. Or someone else takes the Kshatriya part, so therefore we got to learn martial arts and be tough. Right? You know, like that. Or Brahmins will just sit in our room and study all day and don't do anything else. You know, say so they take what part they want, and that's all. Does that make sense? You know, so like that. Yes.
In manifestation of rasa in relation to how does yoga maya play the role?
How does Jog Maya play the role? Meaning?
It's like,
you want to know if she does like if it's more natural, or she uses Stanislavski, or you know, what do you mean by how does she play her role? Reader's theater, or is it spontaneous, or it's actually practiced beforehand? Or?
In Damodar Lila, I've heard that when she is helping Krishna to express his expressions, when, like fearfulness, and
that's a problem.
No problem. I want to understand whether because a person who knows the rasa.
So you want to know if you're expressing your own or someone else has to help you. But, you know, I'm big now. I can express my own rasa. It's just like this. If Krishna is God, the supreme Lord and controller of everything, everything's coming from Him, everything is non-different from Him, how are you going to interact with Him? You understand? So even in Vaikuntha, there has to be a level of yoga maya so that they can function. So yoga maya is just creating that environment of that mood so that they can interact nicely. You know, so depending upon the general mood, she sees that it's there. And if the lila ever goes in a direction that shouldn't, just spontaneously goes, it's just like, means who's a nicer boy than Krishna? Is there another nicer boy? No. Is there a nicer girl than Radharani? Okay. So now in a village where everybody gets married, so what would be the natural conclusion? Radha and Krishna get married. Right? So Mother Yashoda, therefore, then Radharani's there, kind of the time is coming for them to get married, so then she chooses Radharani as the, you know, proper, you know, bride for her son. Right? Puts the turmeric on his hand, her hands and everything like that. And Radharani wouldn't want to marry, who would she want to marry? Abhimanyu or Krishna? Okay, Krishna. Okay. So, then, and what about any of the other gopis? Who would they want to marry? Krishna. Okay. So, therefore, nobody has a problem with it. Right? Mother Yashoda doesn't have a problem. You know, how you say? Vrishabhanu Maharaj wouldn't have a problem. Nobody has a problem. Right? Like that. Everybody's in ecstasy. But the problem is Vrindavan's supposed to be Parakya. Otherwise, you don't taste that highest rasa. Swakya is already being tasted in Dwarka. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, she has to adjust the situation. because it's just naturally gone just from this spontaneity. So then she adjusts it so that it ends up in a different way. So you know, everyone forgets about that, and Krishna doesn't get married, and the gopis marry someone else. Does that make sense? So they have to be married to someone else. Then it's actually, you know, parakia. But he shouldn't be married to someone else. Otherwise, then you have a woman who does have the right to control him. You understand? So that's where gopis are married. He's not. Right? So just Yoga Maya arranged that. But otherwise, it's just she's making the environment, making sure the situations are correct. All the right people are there at the right time. But the experiences themselves, those are doing. So when he says that fearfulness, then, you know, because these arrangements are there. It's not that, you understand? Don't take it so far. That's why he's saying about empirical speculation. Because then the worry is am I doing this myself? Like that. The point is Krishna is there. Everybody is his servant. Right? What's that? Chaitanya Charitamrita?
Ekale
Ishvara Krishna. Yeah, Ekale Ishvara Krishna Arsabhritya. Everybody else is servant. So everybody's just assisting in his past. Why not? It means everybody's doing it. Why just Yoga Maya? Right? Is that something? Yes. Between other
residents of
Vrindavan, not just between the devotee and Krishna, but somehow between the other residents. Yeah, that's fine. That's why it says Krishna and his devotees, they're alambana. Like that. So you can get inspired by Krishna, get inspired by the devotees. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it works both ways. You had something? Means you appreciate more what's going on. So it's not just about the external activity that's going on. There's the whole flavor that's there. So it's just a matter of appreciating more of what's happening. Does that make sense? Krishna's beauty, quality, and pastimes are the mainstay of Madhurya Rasa. Initially, Rati manifests the ecstatic beauty of Krishna. And after the beauty has been relished, Bhava, in its variegatedness, turns around and reciprocally enhances Rati. Therefore, in conclusion, all the divisions of Bhava, Vibhava, Anubhava, Sattvika Bhava, and Sanchari Vyavachari Bhava, give support to Rati and vice versa. So Rati is that attraction, that attachment to Krishna. Right? That's just the way it means. Your Stai Bhava is the Rati, is your particular attraction to Krishna. Right? So in other words, the beauty and all that then is relished. At the same time, as that also nourishes the bhava itself. So you're able to appreciate it, and it makes it, increases it. That makes sense? The love for Krishna, they're able to appreciate, that means they experience that love for Krishna by the interaction, and at the same time that love is increased. Right? Both go on at once. Right? Does that make sense? Vrajanath, Gurudev, kindly explain to us the differences between Krishna Rati, loving attachment for Krishna, and Vishaya Rati, attachment for material objects of enjoyment, right? So, in other words, the Rati is there, so what's the difference between its spiritual manifestation and the material manifestation? Goswami, Vishaya Rati is worldly and gross. Krishna Rati is super mundane and purely spiritual. The roots of Krishna Rati are in the extraordinary, in transcendence. Worldly love is felt as pleasure when the lovers are united, and as pain is when they are separated. When Krishna prema blossoms in the heart, the pure devotee's heart, rasa is churned up to produce nectarian bliss. In the mood of separation, this bliss acquires wonderful nuances. During the conversation between Sri Chaitanya and Srila Ramananda Rai, the latter composed a poem in reply to the question of Mahaprabhu. The poem, given in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila 8.194, describes the fascinating facets of Vipralamba, bliss and separation, in some detail. A whisper of grief is seemingly present in these lines, but in reality they are descriptions of intense exaltation. Footnote 4. Okay, so this is the actual quote. Right? Yeah. Alas, before we met, there was an initial attachment between us, brought about by an exchange of glances. In this way, attachment evolved. That attachment has gradually grown, and there is no limit to it. Now that attachment has become a natural consequence between ourselves. It is not that it is due to Krishna, the enjoyer, nor is it due to me, for I am the enjoyed. It is not like that. This attachment was made possible by mutual meeting. This mutual exchange of attraction is known as Manobhava, or Cupid. Krishna's mind and my mind have merged together. Now during this time of separation, it is very difficult to explain these loving affairs. My dear friend, though Krishna might have forgotten all these things, you can understand and bring this message to him. But during our first meeting, there was no messenger between us, nor did I request anyone to see him. Indeed, Cupid's five arrows were our via media. Now, right, because the five arrows are, I'm not sure exactly what they are, but they have a specific, I think they're the five aspects of Bhava, of Rati. But the arrows, Krishna Bhanaya is the Abhideya aspect, right? In other words, it's the interaction that's there, and that means those five aspects of that Rati are what's making it work. Now, during this separation, that attraction has increased to another ecstatic state. My dear friend, please act as messenger on my behalf, because if one is in love with a beautiful person, this is the consequence. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport, these verses were originally composed and sung by Ramananda Rai himself. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur suggests that during the time of conjugal enjoyment, the attachment might be compared to Cupid himself. However, during the period of separation, Cupid becomes a messenger of highly elevated love. This is called prema vilas vivarta. When there is separation, conjugal enjoyment itself acts like a messenger, and that messenger was addressed by Srimati Radharani as a friend. The essence of this transaction is that transcendental loving affairs are as relishable during separation as during conjugal enjoyment. When Srimati Radharani was fully absorbed in love of Krishna, she mistook a black tamal tree for Krishna and embraced it. Such a mistake is called prema vilas vivarta. Right. Everybody understand? Okay. Yeah. So now do we see the difference between what's being discussed here and what's being discussed in Chaitanya Charitamrita? Same topic. But the difference is we're trying to get here and understanding of just what's what, what's where, you know, what did the eye move or not, or was it the nostrils, or that kind of thing. And the other one, it's about what is the flavor and taste that's there and the nature of how that taste moves. You understand? But notice in here, it's all about the relationship. It's not about what they've done. That's a medium. It's about the relationship. So they're talking about the interaction with each other based on that attachment, not about what they're going to do, you know, or even worse, that, you know, well, you're getting what you want out of the relationship, but I'm not getting what I want. Right? That's kind of like bottom of the barrel stuff there, right? Does that make sense? because it's nothing to do with what's the natural attachment. That's a whole different thing. So that's why we're saying in the material world, the material rati, that's why he says it's worldly and gross. Because it's not actually a really proper manifestation of it. The spiritual is super mundane and transcendental, or extraordinary in transcendence. Right? So it's very different. But the mechanics are the same. Yes?
So in the material world, the attachment would be actually to the body itself, which is not the person.
It's to the body, but it's not even just to the body, it's to what you get from that body. Right? Because the body is there, and everybody else sees the body, but you're attached and they're not. Why? Because you like, let's say, the way they laugh or something. But the other persons don't like that kind of laugh. Right? You know, so they don't get something from it, so they don't like. You understand? But the point is this being based on this attachment. There's no limit. Now the attachment becomes a natural consequence between us. The attachment is the consequence. Not that we do this together, we do that together. It's that we have that attachment. That's why those things are done together. So therefore, Cupid is just being experienced there. But here now he's pointing out that Cupid is being that flavor, that feeling that is gained, that inspiration, that is being who's being asked to be the messenger. You know, so it's a whole, we're talking on a whole different realm here. Right? Okay. Okay. Vrajanath, the more I hear about this topic, the thirstier I become to hear more. What are these rasas? Goswami. Srila Rupa Goswami writes in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindha 2564, the one principal rati of divine love is divided into five principal devotional rasas. Shanta, neutrality, passivity. Prita, satisfaction and servitude. Praya, affection. Vatsalya, protective indulgence. And Madhurya, conjugality? Okay. I guess you have to go with that one. There's no conjugality. Conjugality. See, the problem is because it should just be pronounced flat, but because they like to emphasize, somehow that's the Anglo-Saxon thing. You have to emphasize something. You know, so it has to be. Yes.
On the previous page.
We skipped the page.
No.
We skipped a little bit on the previous page. Oh, yeah. Rajanath, how many spiritual rasas are there? Goswami, there is one mukhya rati, which is divided into five principal rasas, plus the seven gona rasas, thus making a total of eight. Right? Does that make sense? So here's another way of looking at it. One, you'll be in one of the rasas, but actually mukhya rasa is one. In other words, there's adi rasa. Adi rasa contains the other five. So therefore that one has been split into five. Right? So that five and the seven makes 12, you could say, rasas. But at the same time, you can count it as those five are one, because that's the mukhya. And then the seven, so that way you get eight. Yes.
So that means that the residents of the spiritual world, they experience all of fives at some degree?
Not necessarily. No, it's just their particular one that they're in. It's not that they can't appreciate them all. Because otherwise, how would you appreciate another rasa unless it's all part of one rasa, unless there's some common ground? Right, because how parental rasa is very different from friendship. Like friendship, it mentions here as affection, right? Vatsalya is protective indulgence. The affection is there, that's why you're protectively. Oh, you're going to let your kid do that, you know? But you know, the point is it's the affection that's underlying it. But it's what's going on. How you and how you're, how you say. it's interesting, protective indulgence, right? Because they overly indulge in protecting, right? You know, like the kid when he goes out to play doesn't actually require that many clothes because he can't even move. That's why he takes them off. But his mom is going, why does he always take them off? Because you can't play in that many clothes, right? Like that, you know. And then you want to make him keep it on so you could wrap him up with that, you know, how you say that, plastic wrap? What do you call it? Saran wrap or, you know, stuff like that, you know. Make some holes in his head, you know, so that they can play. So you can't take it off, you know. But it'd be really good because then if they throw snowballs at you, your clothes would get wet, so you know it has some advantages there. So, does that make sense? In other words, rasa, mukhya rasa is one thing, but it has five aspects. So someone's in one of those aspects as a rasa, but the conjugal meet. But each higher one includes all the lower ones. So the conjugal rasa includes them all. So they can, the higher one can always appreciate anything else. You know what I'm saying? Because they already include the one below it. So conjugal rasa includes everything. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay.
Which gopi represents the mukhya rasa?
Which gopi? It has to be one gopi.
No, but isn't there the eight main gopis represent one of these each? Or did I misunderstand?
No. That's a different thing altogether. That's a whole different consideration. Okay. Well, that'll probably come in the last chapter. Okay. You like that? You like that? Your bane hasn't been roasted enough yet. Well, don't worry, it'll get roasted. So we're saying that the eight means mukhya ras because it includes all five aspects of rasa as one. And the gona rasas are the seven secondary rasas as seven. Yeah. Why we say like that? Because why do you take the gona rasas as one? Because they're always changing. Mm. The mukhya rasa never changes. So whichever it is, there is only one. But it's just one aspect of the overall one rasa. Mm-hmm. So that means one rasa has these five primary aspects and these seven secondary aspects. So you could say there's just rasa. There's one. So the Adi Rasa includes all of that. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Yeah. The eight gopis, that's another thing. That's the eight kinds of, how you say, heroines. Like that. That's another.
Oh.
Like that.
Good thing I got that clear.
Okay. I mean, we're having enough trouble telling the difference between masculine and feminine rather than eight kinds of feminine. Like that, you know, so. One step at a time. Don't want to get ahead of yourself.
I was wondering which gopi was representing ghastliness.
No, it's not that. It's that Radharani is, you know, the complete whole.
Yeah.
Nice. The residents of Vrindavan, they used to remember Krishna's pastimes by, in poem form, they would engage Brahmanas, and then they write some poetry, and then they'd be singing these poems, you know.
Yes.
And I was thinking maybe it'd be a good way to remember all these, because there's like the one, the seven, the 31, you know, the 40-something, you know. There's so many different terms, you know.
Okay, and then you'll put this together, and then you'll play lute or something, sing it all for us.
We can
try to get a few recorders to back you up.
I was trying to think about the best way to remember these. You know, I was thinking that poetry, and then there was
a harpsichord would be good also.
There was a play, you know, like somebody comes in and they're like all white, but they have like a such and such bob, and then somebody comes in and crosses into them. And then they become this bob, you know, and then it's, you know, like that. But
yeah, go ahead, write the play. Yeah.
Write
and
play.
And then, you know, we can talk to Sony and see if they want to do anything with it. Okay, the one principal rati of divine love is divided into the five principal devotional rasas. Right, so rati is divided into the five rasas, right? Because rati means that attraction or attachment to Krishna. Each succeeding rasa is increasingly superior to the preceding one because it includes it. There are seven subordinate rasas: hasya, humor; adbhuta, wonder; vira, enthusiasm; chivalry, karuna; mercy, enthusiasm, vira, chivalry. Oh, vira is enthusiasm and chivalry. Karuna is mercy. Raudra, wrath. Bhayanaka, fear. And bibhatsa, ghastliness. Vrajanath, Gurudev, I am keen to understand what persons are worthy of successfully fathoming rasa tattva. I guess we should have had this question at the beginning. Okay, only persons who are able to awaken achintya bhava by the profound gada samskar of bhakti, as just described, are eligible candidates for rasa tattva. All others are barred. Srila Rupa Goswami writes in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 579, right? Everyone's waiting for more detail. Am I allowed to? On the basis of bhava, Stai Bhava is established like a monument of breathtaking beauty and wonder. It's relished in the heart that is illuminated and cleansed by pure goodness. This is rasa. Okay. Okay, Vrajanath, which persons are considered unfit for rasa? Okay, in other words, awaken the achintya bhava of bhakti, right? So, he says profound. In other words, the greater the, what is it, profundity of bhakti, then the greater the appreciation one will have to understanding rasa tattva. Right? Okay, to instruct an unfit person upon Harinam is nam aparad. Similarly, to reveal the subtleties of rasa to an undeserving person is a gross aparad. Gurudev, kindly prevent us from doing so, as we are already in a lost condition. Goswami, the practice of vairagya, whilst rejecting shuddha bhakti, is in truth falgu vairagya, false renunciation. Similarly, the pursuit of jnana, whilst rejecting shuddha bhakti, is shushka jnana, dry empirical mental speculation. Krishna bhakti ras is the greatest treasure of spiritual life. It must be very well protected from unworthy plunderers, just as valuable gems are always carefully guarded from thieves. The falgu vairagyas, show bottle renunciates, shushka jnanis, dry empiricists, falgu nyayis, false rhetoricians, karmis, fruit of workers, vishayis, gross sensual materialists, mayavadis, impersonalists, and monists are opposed to shuddha bhakti and are thus amongst the unworthy. Right. So does that resonate with anyone here? You want to leave at this time? Okay, so in other words, if one's not opposed to devotional service, one is actually sincerely wants to know devotional service, then one can hear the topic. But if one's not, you know, though manifesting seemingly good qualities of knowledge, renunciation, logic, you know, or material success, but one's still unqualified. Right? Qualification simply comes by one is actually interested in awaken the concept of bhakti. Okay. Gurudev, Vrajanath, Gurudev, we are so fortunate to hear these wonderful instructions from you. We will try to follow them sincerely. Vijaya, Gurudev, I maintain my family by reciting and lecturing on the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is actually a treatise on rasa. It is therefore an aparad to earn money. Is it therefore an aparad to earn money by reading Srimad Bhagavatam to the ordinary public? Goswami, indeed, the Bhagavatam is an excellent text, and the crown jewel of all scriptures, being the mature nectarian fruit of the entire Vedic literature. Simply abide by its espousals, especially this particular verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam 113. O devotees who are thoughtful experts on the science of rasa, O devotees who are the relishers of rasa, kindly continue, even after liberation, to savor the sublime and nectarian fruit of the Vedas, known as the Srimad Bhagavatam. The point is, it's something that's beyond. In other words, you'll really be able to relish it when you come to the liberated platform, because then there's no material elements of rasa getting in the way. But it's pointing out is you should continue to enjoy that. It didn't have a horn on the head, right? No, okay. Like that. And so, Because then you'll really relish it, because it is a transcendental topic matter. Like that. So then continue, because there's that element of, because jiva, tatastha means is neutral. So the tendency is we take the neutrality as a goal. But he's trying to point out is neutrality is not a goal. Means being absorbed in bhakti ras, that's the goal. Right? That love for Krishna is the goal, not just spirituality. So getting from the material to the spiritual, you should continue to go forward into devotion, into continuing relishing Srimad Bhagavatam. In other words, don't hear Srimad Bhagavatam to just get liberated. Right? That's what they were talking about. The Pushti Margis are saying those who do that, that's the Maryada. They follow all the rules and regulations, they follow the devotional practices simply to just get to that neutral state of liberation. But those who actually are nourishing the devotion, that is that once they get to liberation, they continue that after liberation within the spiritual relationship. Does that make sense? Yes.
Maharaj, when he mentioned that he maintained his family by reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam.
Yes.
What is it exactly saying?
Dakshin, or is it asking for? No, it's dakshin. It's not, because see, the thing is if you're doing one of the brahminical activities and you actually charge a fee for it, then you slowly, gradually reduce your ability in that science. You know? You may know the skill, but you can't use it properly. You know, your understanding of it goes away. So that's why the Brahmins just live by dakshin. So whatever comes, because it's up to the Lord, whatever you get. So they could give you a lot, they could give you a little. Right? Because otherwise, if he wants to maintain his ability to appreciate and understand and recite Bhagavatam, he has to work by dakshin. Otherwise, then you see people are really good. Everyone talks about how good they are. And then after a while, they're not so good. It wasn't that they were not good. You know, it's just, oh, they were never good. Just, you know, we thought he was. No, he was good. But because of charging, now he's not. Does that make sense? So it reduces, it goes down. So that's why it has to be dakshin. Any brahminical thing. But because of that, then people have to know what's the value of the brahminical culture and the activities. And so for they give a proper and suitable dakshin. Right? No, we're devotees, we get by the least as possible, right? Okay, let's give the guy $20, but I'll spend $120 on the perfume for the wife. Right, you know, like that. So that's the whole thing, is one has to make the distinction. There's no, you know, if the wife is so valuable that I'm willing to give $120 for the perfume, then how much more valuable is that knowledge by which I will be able to engage my wife and her perfume in Krishna's service? Like that. So, you know, it should be appropriate. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's the...
What about if
I only get $20 perfume? So that is a $20. Okay, go ahead.
And we give lecture to outside people and not to devotees.
No, but this is lecture. This is not reciting Bhagavatam. This means he goes through and explains all the stories and everything in Bhagavatam. So it's more of a... it's kind of, for these people, it's more of an entertainment. Of course, there's the spiritual benefit, so kind of, because if you just sit there and go and recite, they're not coming. It's because you can tell the stories, you can do the things, when they all start to fall asleep, you start a kirtan, you know, it's a whole arrangement. You know, there's prasad, it's a whole show.
So we can charge.
I think you missed the whole point. First, we were defining what is a Bhagavat Saptaha here. Right? Then the point is you can't charge. It has to be dakshin. Means if you're charging and it's going to the temple, then, you know, the temple can do stuff like that, though it's not ideal. But an individual can't. What's the... which synapse did we miss?
Like, for example, we give several Bhagavad Gita to some outside businessman, so can we charge from that?
The point is with them, unless you charge, they won't take it seriously.
Yeah, that's true.
That's just because that's the culture and the etiquette.
So it's really charged, right?
It's the way it has to work. Do you understand? But that's not your goal. Your goal is that they understand it and apply it in their life and become devotees. And so then they'll be giving you much more. If your goal was simply to get the money off the seminar, then better you find another way to make money. You know what I'm saying? In other words, if I say we're having a free thing, then they won't take it seriously. But if I say it's $2,000 a head, then they take it seriously. You know what I'm saying? And so they'll listen. They're paying $2,000, they'll listen. Right? You are charging $2,000, right? You're not charging $2,000 a head? You're getting a big, like, coliseum kind of thing, stadium, and then everybody is paying $2,000, right? 2,000 people paying $2,000, right? You're not making $4 to $5 million off of every program?
That's so great.
Oh, okay. The other guys are.
Yeah, but if we can, why not?
Well, you're missing the point. Why do the sub? Is it to raise money? Nowadays, it's all about what makes money. The point is, therefore, before it was spiritual life was something we applied in our life, and the other was, but this is grace, but we can sell this. So, but is the point to make the money, or is the point to engage the person? Like Prabhupada had life membership. It wasn't for raising money. It was for making devotees. Why? Because they could stay 3 days free in our temple. What does that mean? What are you going to do for 3 days in a Hare Krishna temple? Right? You're going to attend the program, go to the classes, take prasad, sit around and discuss with the devotees, do some service. What happens after 3 days of doing that? Right? You become purified. You might be interested in devotional service. You might surrender. Or at least you'll be interested to come back. Right? And then again and again. And then eventually you become a devotee. So it wasn't about money making, because those persons, if they're devotees, you're going to, means when Prabhupada made members for 1,111 rupees, he was making the richest men in India. You know, it'd be like in the West going to the Rothschilds and asking him for, $1,000. You know what I'm saying? I'm saying, so that is the Rothschilds, the Rockefellers, the Birlas, the Bajorias, the Maheshwar, these are who they were moving with, right? You know, you see in the movies about palaces, they lived in them. That's normal, but it's because if they become devotees and interested, then naturally, because they're business people, then they'll do more. The point is to be engaged in service. So for them, giving money is their service, because they can't put in so much time and other things. So that's just one way to catch that community. You know, it's a side thing that you make money. But the main point was the preaching. We take it as money. So the point is having a Gita seminar, the point is that you're exposing people to the Gita, not that you're making money. Because if you're just making money, that means then what you speak at your seminar, they have to like, rather than you're actually giving the philosophy of Gita. You understand? Okay?
Yeah.
Okay, according to this edict, only eligible candidates for rasa tattva. According to this edict, the only eligible candidates for rasa tattva are the devotees who are bhavuka, thoughtful and expert, and the rasika, relishers of rasa. Right. So if you're not a relisher of rasa, at least if you're thoughtful, and try to engage everything nicely in Krishna's service, then that'll also work. It'll be able to appreciate. No other person is permitted access. Therefore, my son, immediately abandon this method of earning your living. You are a thirsty searcher for rasa. do not commit further aparad against rasa tattva. The Vedas, Taittiriya Upanishad 2.7, declare raso vai saha. Rasa is personified in Krishna. The scriptures offer several options for earning one's living. Follow their bona fide advice, but stop lecturing and reading the Bhagavatam for monetary gain. If you find a rasika audience, certainly read the Bhagavat Purana to them with great jubilation, but without expectation of taking a fee, a donation, etc. Right? He's just reading for their benefit. They give something nice like that. That's just the way it works. That's why only Brahmins can do these things. Right? Because they don't... The general tendency is that people don't reciprocate nicely with the Brahmins, right? Why is it brought out that Yudhishthira was feeding 100,000 Brahmins at a time, first class prasad, nicely, and that was going on all day? Because most people don't do that. Right? Why is it mentioned that this king and his yajna, he was giving five times the normal dakshin to the Brahmins? Because people generally don't. It's rare to get him to give a normal dakshin. Does that make sense? Yeah. So these are brought out because it's important. But only Brahmins can function like that. Right? In other words, the Brahmin can sit and study and teach, even if he's getting nothing. But a Kshatriya can't run a country without tax. You understand? You can't do that. The Vaishya can't unless he's making profit. And the Shudra, unless he can express himself, then he's not going to be satisfied. But he has to make that profit, yes.
Is that because the Brahmin is getting nurtured on a different level?
It's because he's not so materially attached. So therefore he can function. Right? It means, of course, there is that higher level. But what it means in the example we're giving here is because they're functioning on a much less material level. So if they have more, you use it, it's comfortable. But if you don't, life goes on. But with the others, it doesn't. They can't function like that. Right? You know what I'm saying? In other words, a Brahmin can be happily poor. Others may be poor, but they're not happy. Yeah. Okay. 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 So that's it.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki.
Jai.
Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.